Mark Carmen, Adam Hogue.
Chicago Sports Conversation.
Wide, wide world of sports.
This is The Beat.
Welcome in. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Adam Hogue, Mark Carmen here with you on 720 WGN until 7 o'clock. Plenty to get to on the show today. Glad you're with us, and maybe you're driving around on this Memorial Day weekend trying to get to whatever destination it is you're going. It's a busy weekend out there on the roads, Mark.
It is. You need to turn that volume down.
I turned the TV on right before we came on the air here, and inside a radio studio, for some reason, the volume was up on the TV.
To 60. Adam, I just want to congratulate myself as we start the show today.
Okay. Congratulations to you.
You know how we did win your workout last couple of weeks?
Yes.
Today, I won my cleaning job. I clean the apartment. I clean the car. My trunk has never been this clean.
I've seen your trunk.
It's brutal. It's brutal.
You're telling me that thing's spotless
it's
now?
It's immaculate.
Oh, my God. I got to see this.
I mean, there's like a... We'll take a picture after the show, but
I might have to go out there during a break and really verify how clean it is.
I got my tennis racket bag all organized nicely. I've got my baseball cleats, my mitt. I think that somebody stole my football out of my trunk, but that's cool.
That's not cool.
Well, I'm okay with it because I think I occasionally tend to leave my door open by accident. And like people, like I've had my computer in my car, and like I literally had my car broken into outside my apartment 2 weeks ago. They rummaged through my glove compartment. I don't know. I think they might have actually been looking for a gun. I don't know. But like my computer was in the trunk. You could have had like my whole life.
Maybe they couldn't get in the trunk.
They were in the car. All you had to do was
sometimes you can lock that.
Yeah, no. They could have gotten in if they wanted it. I think they were looking for bam bam. It's my guess. I don't know.
Probably not the car they should have been looking in if that's what they were looking
for.
Yeah,
why would you go with the weak? You think, does that car, 2006 Accord with 150,000 miles, doesn't scream it? It does? You think it does?
It might. If they saw you inside it, it wouldn't be screaming it, but.
That's true.
By the way, speaking of softball cleats, I need a new softball team.
New softball team?
Did you hear the news?
What, the teams that you guys aren't playing?
I'm very disappointed. This is actually.
Oh my God, this is emotional.
I'm upset about it.
Did you get cut?
No, I didn't get cut. The team got cut. We couldn't field the team this year.
Why not?
I don't know. 720 WGN could not get enough guys to field a softball team in the 16-inch radio league that I've been playing in for 8 years now.
Well, that's tough. I have a Monday night team. We've got 14 guys that literally come out every Monday night. We've got split. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. We got people. Can you split a half game? I mean, that's going on. There's just a lot of people that
I got invited to another Tuesday league at UIC on the actual women's softball diamond, which sounds awesome. They have a home run fence and everything.
Played many years at UIC. That's a good league.
Yeah.
You better bring your A game, buddy.
Well, the only problem is, you know, I'm moving to Vernon Hills next week. So getting down to UIC every Tuesday evening in rush hour from Vernon Hills, I don't know about that one.
I got a Wednesday night Northbrook for you. I can get you in as a sub on a Wednesday night Northbrook.
Okay, that's convenient. I'll take that.
If Danny Sternfield's listening, just text me that if you're willing to take on Hogue. I haven't seen him play. I feel like he's probably...
Slap singles, and I'm going to catch everything in the outfield.
That's a bold comment.
When I say that, I mean I won't drop it. Now, we had a little issue the other night. The sun... was, and I'm not trying to make excuses, but I'm talking about the most brutal sun you ever could have seen, plus Lake Michigan out in left field after the heavy rains. We had some issues of getting to the balls, seeing them off the bat, but everyone I was there for, I will never drop a ball. I will make that proclamation.
I mean, I have to vet you for, you know, to put you on teams. I might have to get you out to a practice. You might have to come to Saturday.
Are you telling me I got to go through a tryout for a 16-inch softball league?
No 16. We're playing 12. We got
mitts. Oh, good. I want to play at 12. Yeah, that's the Wednesday? I'm in.
Yeah, no. I don't play that.
Then I definitely will get to everything, and I'll probably hit better too.
Okay. I don't play the 16 because I want to keep my fingers as they are and not...
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, that's a huge problem. So, as we start the show, last week, I think actually for maybe the last month now, we've been building up the angry Adam Hogue as we tend to learn... At least I learn more about Adam Hogue.
Yeah, I was trying to tell someone this week what you called me, and I couldn't remember. Was it hungry... You're going off hungry hippos.
Hungry, hungry hoagie.
Hungry, hungry hoagie.
Like last week, because his mood swings. But I'm hungry, and then he was like, you see like an energy dive, and the other energy dive that I see from you is when the White Sox go the opposite way, which right now is not happening. The
today's energy is gonna be great. We got 4 hours. White Sox are up 7-1. However, this is the Royals, so no lead is safe, as we learned last night.
So they're up 5-1 last night.
Yeah,
things are looking great. You got the grand slam from Melky Cabrera.
Yeah.
You feel like, all right.
Which I actually missed walking to my car, and I'm in the car, and the White Sox made a couple outs, and I didn't realize that they were up 5-1. And so I'm in the car whining about how these guys aren't hitting anything. And then Farmio goes, and the inning's over, White Sox are up 5-1. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, Melky did it for you. But then, as reported to me by Adam Hogue, as he self-reports, which is what we need on the show. We need honesty.
Oh, I'm always about honesty.
So they end up blowing the game, and you were on a date last night with your wife and Adam Johns from the Chicago Sun-Times and his wife as well.
We had a little double date action. It was a goodbye, sort of a get-together since I'm leaving the neighborhood.
Oh, okay.
We're neighbors.
I see. So, and then you ruined the whole night because the White Sox blew the lead.
I didn't ruin the whole night, but
you...
To your point that you made last week, that my mood does change a little bit based on what's going on in the White Sox game. I'm somewhat embarrassed, but always willing on the show. I think you and I are maybe the two most honest radio hosts in this entire city.
That's a bold statement, but listen.
We put it all out there for you.
I mean, I've said on this radio station 100 times that I sleep with a stuffed animal. I don't know how much more vulnerable you need to be.
There you go.
Hashtag Arnold the Duck, my man.
Arnold the Duck.
Yeah, so go ahead.
I did not know that, and I think I just found out a lot. Like,
had that duck around the Carmen family.
I just got a lot of explanations for things that you complain about.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. I'm uncomfortable. Please tell me how you ruined the night so we can move away from Arnold the Duck. I didn't mean to bring him up.
Okay. Sorry, I was trying to change the subject. No, but I am somewhat embarrassed but willing to admit that... We were sitting at the aisle up in Edison Park, and there may have been a moment where my wife was actually giving me a pep talk to get back in the moment and enjoy the rest of the evening. There may have been some comments like, it's only one game, Adam. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
So your wife is having a nice time at dinner, and Adam's having a nice time.
We're done with dinner. This was the after dinner.
Okay.
Couple cocktails at the aisle.
So this is the post-dinner. Everyone's had a nice meal. You're having a little celebratory. We're moving. We still love you. We're going to see you. Don't worry.
Right.
We're all going to still hang out. And the White Sox blow a 4-run lead.
Right before our eyes.
They're about to fall out of first place, although they're still there. And your head is on the table.
No, it wasn't that bad. I had shut down, like, vocally. Like, the conversation between the four of us at a nice circular high top was sort of a three-way conversation at that point, and I'm just sort of staring at the TV, shaking my head at the White Sox bullpen. And I'm not even sure if the game was over yet. My wife was, like, giving me a pep talk.
Oh,
like,
it was
stay
over
in the moment.
Although I was watching the eighth and ninth last night, and Hawk to the very last out. Hawk's sitting there. Just need one hit. You got to stay up. You never know. And then they lose, and then Hawk, I love him. I love the guy. They lose. He's like, well, no matter what, we're going to wake up tomorrow, we're going to be in first place.
That's what he kept saying today in the first inning. He said it like four times. And I'm thinking, maybe he keeps saying that because this could literally be the last day they're in first place while he's the voice of the White Sox.
Well, that takes me like to horrible Cubs seasons of 3 years ago where they would go under 500 at 0-1. I'm like, will they get to 500 again all season long? I don't think they will. And they didn't. They never hit 500. So stay up. You have to realize that what we're doing on this show, Dan Long, myself, and of course, you know, your own submission to what we're trying to bring you to, is you can use it in other parts of your life.
What?
That the depressed Hogue, the White Sox affected Hogue,
yeah.
He doesn't have to be. He can you can see that guy, you can see that you're slipping into it, and then you can just bound right back out.
I think that's what happened last night. The night was not ruined.
Well, your wife seemed to help you. If she hadn't stepped in.
But you
had to do it yourself too.
But the pep talk helped. I appreciate it. And I did bring up the point that we had discussed on the show last week that in the 9 years I've known my wife, the White Sox have only been in the playoffs once. And that's when I realized, she actually pointed this out, we met the week after the White Sox won the World Series.
See, you were in a great mood.
So she met me at the high point, you know?
You had good energy.
Great energy. They won the World Series.
You were happy-go-lucky.
I think it was Halloween in Madison.
You were happy.
I mean, it's a great time. And, yeah.
It's been straight downhill.
And then there's been one playoff appearance in 9 years, and she was living in Milwaukee at that point, so she didn't even experience that really with me.
A simple question for everybody. Do you let your sports teams affect your mood like Adam Hoge has done in the past, but he's working on that now?
It's really sad. Like, by the way, that's really the only team where that happens.
Well, right. Everybody's got their breaking point.
Let's talk about Wisconsin losing to Duke in the national championship.
That one
hung for a little bit.
Right, but this is more like just regular season, like, 1 of 162. Yeah. Do you let your sports teams ruin your mood? And please tell us stories. 312-981-7200. A guy who caught two foul balls at Wrigley yesterday.
Pretty impressive.
In the midst of many beers. Will be with us at 3:35. WGN. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Adam Ho. This is The Beat. Hope you're having a great Memorial Day weekend. Speaking of self-awareness and Adam Hoge ruining last night's dinner, that's unfair, but
Nothing was ruined.
Kind of fun to say. How does Alshon Jeffrey, Chicago Bear wide receiver, one of the great young talents in the game when his head is on straight, how does he not go to OTAs? By the way, I don't really care. But if you don't go to OTAs, how are you at Wrigley Field today, able to make an appearance as the seventh inning stretch singer? And by the way, head coach John Fox is there. They're all chummy. So I guess they're bending over backwards for this guy, and he's just like continuing to just do the Alshon.
Well, this is really a weird situation because we're having this conversation during the break, like literally 90 seconds ago, and I'm going, this is not a good look for Alshon. Like, you can't show up to OTAs, but you're gonna show up to Wrigley, throw out the first pitch, and sing the 17th stretch because he's training in Florida. So he gets his ass to Chicago to do that, but he can't be at practice. And then I jump on the Twitter, and there's a photo here from @MarkGrodySports, pre and post for the Cubs. He's got a picture of John Fox and Alshon Jeffrey hanging out together at the game right now.
Well, Foxy wanted to see a baseball game. Figured he'd hang out with his top wide receiver.
Because I'm thinking in my head, I'm going, this is not going to fly with John Fox. Like, first of all, they're already not happy that he's not at practice. Now, this is different than Martellus Bennett.
How so?
Because Martellus Bennett was not on a franchise tag. He wasn't even in the final year of his contract. In Alshon's situation, he's trying to get a long-term deal. He does not want to get hurt. Especially with his history of injuries. Last thing he wants to do is run out there on, you know, a non-padded practice in OTAs and pull his hamstring again.
Does that not say something, though, if you're worried about getting hurt at OTAs?
Yeah, but look at Kevin White's situation last year. There's plenty of guys that get freak injuries, that get hurt.
Fair enough. Okay.
Jalen Ramsey, the Jaguars' top pick, got hurt. A couple weeks ago, that happened last year to their top pick. Dante Fowler tore his ACL off for the year.
And who was the Buffalo Bill just now they drafted who separated his shoulder?
Shaq Lawson, on
a swim move or whatever.
Yeah, but that was a pre-existing condition. They should have drafted him where they did. But anyway, so this is a little different with Alshon because it's very common for franchise-tagged players not to show up to voluntary workouts because they don't want to. They're trying to get a long-term contract and they don't want to hurt the body. Now, I'm not saying the Bears are okay with it, but it's not as bad as Martellus last year, who still had 2 years left on his deal not showing up. That was kind of ridiculous. Well, and you saw he's no longer a Bear.
Right. While Martellus was trying to get more money, that didn't exactly work out, at least not to this point. Alshon read the lyrics to the seventh inning stretch to sing it, which I guess is better than just getting it wrong, but it's always more entertaining for me if you just get it wrong. If you don't know the lyrics, just wing it. Give me the Ozzy Osbourne. That's even better. How do you not know Take Me Out to the Ball Game, though?
Yeah, that's tough.
Like, at 5 years old, I feel like I do it. But maybe he just hasn't been taken out to the ball game.
He hasn't been taken out to practice.
He's taking himself out of practice.
Take me out to OTAs.
Gone to... This John Fox character...
This John Fox guy...
He bends over backwards for some of his players. I think that's pretty obvious. Some, not all. You got to be in the old Foxy preferred group. Is that not fair?
Well, look,
he'll never say anything bad about anyone, but you can always tell he's got.
But when they're mad at people, you can tell.
Yeah,
like we knew all last year, Martellus was not getting along with Foxy. That was not a thing that was going well.
I still think that's on Foxy. I liked Martellus, man. What
I liked how he played, dude. That dude never went down easy. He went for every yard. Played through injuries.
Yeah, big year for the Patriots.
I think he would have played through that broken rib too that he had, but the Bears decided to put him on IR because I think they were done with him.
I mean, there was his weakest moment was when he's Green Bay Thanksgiving and he's like, yeah, no, I didn't watch it. I was watching.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
I was watching Game of Thrones or whatever he said. I was watching reruns of MASH, dude.
That's a bad.
That's a bad play. That's not how you want to handle
it. Bears Packers on Thursday night.
Yeah, my wife was watching in the other room. She was jumping up and down.
First of all, you should probably be at the game.
That's unbelievable.
Like you should probably be on the sidelines at the game.
That'd be a good teammate. Being at the game would help. All right, here, after the 3:30 news in 2 minutes, we're going to talk to a guy who caught two foul balls. He's a Chicago hero. That might be a little bit too far, but we're going to make. I kind of feel like he is on some level. Phil Koontz, Chicago Cub hero next, 720 WGN.
Crazy crowd start singing with me. Are you ready? Are you ready? I can't hear you. Are you ready? 1, 2, 3, and let's go out to the bar.
It's Alshon Jeffrey at Wrigley earlier today. That's not true. That's Ozzy Osbourne. This is The Beat. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Adam Hoge. We got breaking White Sox news. Cubs are in the ninth, 4-0. They lead the Philadelphia Phillies. Kyle Hendricks going for a complete game, which would be his first all season. White Sox 7-1 on top of Kansas City. White Sox news, Adam Ho. You're Mr. White Sox. So before we talk to Phil Koontz, who's a Chicago hero catching foul balls, the Sox are interested in James Shields. There is energy to the talks.
That is what's just coming across Twitter right now. Dennis Lynn from the San Diego Union-Tribune covers the Padres in San Diego, reporting that the Padres are discussing a potential trade of right-hander James Shields with the Chicago White Sox, and it appears those talks have significant momentum. There's no mention in this story about what the Padres would want in return. There seems to be some conflicting tweets out there about whether or not Tim Anderson, the White Sox top prospect, would be involved in that trade. I would imagine that he's at least coming up in the conversations. That dude's killing it in Charlotte, by the way.
Yeah, I don't see the Sox giving him up in a James Shields deal. I really don't.
Yeah, Shields is 34. He's owed $21 million over each of the next 3 years.
Not nothing. That is a significant chunk of change, although in today's baseball, it's not completely over the top.
But that's enough to say, hey, we're not giving you our top prospect.
Cubs were in on James Shields when that bidding war was going on. San Diego outbid them. Now it seems like they perhaps are regretting that decision, or certainly a small market team who's not in contention.
Yeah.
They can't afford that luxury. All right, let's bring in my guy, Phil Koontz, who caught two foul balls. Hi, Phil. How are you, pal?
I'm great. How are you?
Now, I was walking around Wrigley yesterday. I get to the upper deck about, what section do you sit in, Phil? 425?
Yeah, 424.
424. It's okay. So he's looking down the third base line on the first base side of the field, right?
Got it. Yep.
Okay.
Right.
And you caught your first foul ball in what inning? Do you remember?
Bottom of the first. It was it was Chris Bryant.
Okay.
Bottom of the first.
Okay, now so give the play-by-play. You're sitting there. Are you paying attention? You're not paying attention.
I'm paying attention. I'm halfway through my Bloody Mary, which the other half went all over my leg and the seat in front of me. We were actually speculating about getting a foul ball in those seats because you got the netting there, and either it's going to get popped up over your head or it's going to be a screaming line drive that'll take your face off. So then there's this just, the only one that was even within four or five sections, and it was really a soft bloop. It wasn't even what we had thought. We were completely wrong, which should shock nobody. And I stood up. I'm like, well, here it comes, and it just kept not going somewhere else. I mean, you see the foul balls, and they always look like they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and then you think you're about to catch it, and then it's 65 feet away or something like that. It just kept coming, and then I caught it, and that was wonderful, and then I spilled my drink all over the place, but it was fun.
Now, are we talking one-handed?
Two-handed.
Two-handed. So you just dropped the Bloody Mary.
I put the Bloody Mary down. I kicked it over, though.
Okay.
Yeah. Caught that one, and then, you know, lots of celebration and hijinks, and then in the third inning.
Wait, hold on. Let's not jump ahead completely here. When you caught that ball, was it at its apex? So it was basically just like sitting there in front of you before it kind of fell back down, so it didn't hurt at all?
It did not hurt at all. It felt like I was catching a Nerf ball. I mean, there was adrenaline involved, I'm sure, but it was not coming nearly as fast or as painfully as I would have expected. And I am the opposite of an athlete. In fact, I caught more foul balls yesterday than I had hits in T-ball. Ever. And
you were very.
The only hit that I ever had was actually an error, and I got the game ball. So this is a bit out of character for me.
Well, Phil, you're stepping into a whole new Phil, and I saw a tremendous athletic ability from you yesterday in the brief time I was sitting there getting up and going to get beers and coming back and distributing them to the 10 people you were sitting with, who I think nobody spent more money at Wrigley Field than your crew yesterday.
No.
Third inning now. Fast forward. Give the same exact scenario. What do we got? Are you? I'm assuming you're a little bit. You're feeling yourself at this point. Probably had a couple drinks. You've already got a ball. What's going on?
So I had just gotten back from getting my refill because the other one was all over my leg, which looked kind of gnarly. It looked like I was pretty torn up on the leg, but it was really just tomato juice. And I don't remember who it was that fouled it off, Chris somebody or another from the Phillies. And it had the exact same shape. It was unbelievable. And both of these, you know, I stand up and like, uh-oh, here it comes. And I snagged it again, two-handed. But same thing, it did not hurt. It wasn't coming super fast. But for both of them, if I hadn't caught them, they would have smashed me in the nose. So it's not like I was, you know, shoving over elderly people and children and jumping over rows to get it. It was very much just pure luck. So,
but you made the play, man. You didn't blow it.
I made the play.
Right.
And then I made the play, and then I did a little celebration, which, you know, you blow it up in your mind afterwards. And I'm like, I'm sure I wasn't as obnoxious as I remembered. And then my buddy sent me a video, evidently the Phillies feed, showed the celebration, and sure enough, I was just as, or maybe even more obnoxious than I had remembered, which I tweeted at you, Mark. So
you did?
You should have that. Yeah, I did, just maybe 20 minutes ago, just the short segment of celebration.
I got it here.
And then there you have it. It's the, pinnacle of my life.
By the way, the Cubs have won out in Wrigley today. They beat the Phillies 4-1. Kyle Hendricks, complete game, striking out 7.
Phil, you made history yesterday, man. I don't know anybody who's ever caught 2 foul balls in one game. You did it at the Cubs' 32nd year in their World Series season. And I'll always remember you. And I think hopefully you'll always remember us. That's the goal.
I will always remember you, Mark.
So those are not your seats? You just sat there once? I can't come back and see you again?
My buddy has the seat, so I've been there a couple of times.
Okay.
I'll probably be around there some other time, but not all the time. This is my first game of the year, so.
All right. Well, I still feel like we've bonded enough that you should text me the next time you go to those seats, and I'll come by and say hi.
Game on. I will.
All right.
Phil, are you related to Rusty?
I'm not. Not that I know of.
Okay. Just wanted to check since you're on the phone.
Is there anyone famous in your family?
We're all famous in our own way.
Hey, Phil, Cubs game is over. We're going to ask a Cubs question in a second here. Who's the one player the Chicago Cubs can least afford to lose? What's your answer?
Chris Bryant.
All right.
Wow. We really are kindred spirits here, Phil, because that's my answer, too. Hey, congrats again. And next time you go to Wrigley, I hope you have the same good fortune.
Thanks, fellas. Have a good one.
All right. Phil Kuntz, 2 foul balls, Hogue.
That's pretty.
You ever caught one in your life?
Yeah, I've caught.
Really?
Yeah, I've caught, I think 2 on the fly. Both were ricochets, though. One went into the upper deck, came back down.
Okay.
Kind of a pop-up situation. I went like 5 rows up in the aisle, got right under it, called it. I got it. And I grabbed it. The second one, because my dad's seats are right behind home plate at the cell, so you got the concrete right behind, and it was like a rocket right over the net, bounced off the concrete, came back. I stuck my hand up, and it wedged between. Like, I caught it. It's hard to describe on the radio, but, like, basically wedged between two of my fingers.
You've got big fingers.
You know what they say about that.
I do. Congratulations. Can you palm a basketball?
Oh, yeah.
These are the things that I care about.
Were you about to go ask Dan Long for a basketball?
No.
Oh, I thought you were about to be like, let's see it.
I did look at Dan Long for confirmation on the air that Hogue does have big hands, that I'm not the only one. Look at those hands.
I can confirm that.
I mean, that's a big hand. This dude, you could play in the league with those hands.
In what league?
The NBA, that's the league, man.
Carm, does he pass the eye test for you for your softball leagues?
Well,
this is what I'm talking about. I'm not going to drop a 16-inch softball with these hands.
You got a weird build for softball. You're the tall, lanky guy. Those guys.
Yeah, but I got speed. I'm going to cover a lot of ground.
Yeah.
I'm going to go first to third every single time. I'm going to go first to home a few times.
I'm having a hard time believing you're fast. This is impressive.
Wow.
I've never seen you run. I don't think I've ever seen you run.
Let's go.
We might have to do this.
Let's have a race right now.
You think you beat me in a race?
Yes.
Whoa. It's on, Long. It is on. We are having this moment.
You got to understand that if I'm able to move quick at all, my legs are a lot longer than yours.
You do have some big
legs. I'm covering some ground.
This is true.
I'm like a gazelle.
All right. Fair enough. Hey, we're going to do our Northside Southside report coming back here and start a little Cubs post game. Cubs a winner. White Sox still going on there. They're in the eighth, leading the Royals 7-1. Cubbies back in business. They've won four in a row. 720 WGN.
Sitting on 99 career home runs. And he drives out in the left, number 100. 5-1.
Ross is the boss indeed. Grandpa Rossi with number 100.
It was just my personal thing. Like, it's nice to have a nice round number, you know, 100 in the show, we like to say. And that's pretty cool for me. But that affected the game and impacted the game is even better, right? And it wasn't just a blowout or a meaningless homer when you're down a bunch.
I want to be forever young. Greatest walk-up song ever. Even though it depresses me at the same time. Northside Southside Report, sponsored by Vienna Beef. That's David Ross. Your Cubs, sometimes starter, sometimes backup catcher, with his 100th career homer yesterday, a three-run bomb.
Quite the celebration for a 100.
He's been wanting this for a long time.
I mean, it's just funny.
I love him. I'm a big fan.
Oh, how can you not like David Ross? There's your answer. Who could the Cubs least afford to lose? David Ross, number one choice.
I mean, if I'm David Ross, I'm hitting bombs and I'm hitting 250, I'm not retiring. And he hinted at
like
it too.
David Ortiz, like that dude right now should not retire. He's killing the ball.
Like, if you're right, why would you ever retire if you could still play? I don't get that.
Well, it's a grind, and you know, for a lot of guys, it's not the in season that they don't like. It's the work you have to put in the off season.
Yeah, it's tough. You got to go to the gym. You got to lift weights, and you got to swing the bat, and you got to go out and play. I give them tons of credit for getting there. Everybody,
it's a lot of work.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. It cannot be considered work.
You're right. I mean, it's,
come on.
The average dude's still going to the office every day for same amount of time as you are. You know, lifting those weights probably longer.
Yeah, and like, listen, I if you're a great player, if you're like Derek Jeter and you can't be Derek Jeter anymore and you don't want to hit 220 and be a part-time player, I get it. But if you're David Ross, you're a backup catcher who can hang in the league and hit 210. Why wouldn't you just do that for 40 games until somebody says no? Like, if the Cubs want David Ross back, I'd say, if you have a son who you really want to be around and you want to do the Adam LaRoche thing and you've made enough money, I suppose I respect that, but That would be extremely tough if I was in that situation.
Let's not talk about that.
I'm not in that situation. Cubs will winner at Wrigley 4-1. A complete game for Kyle Hendricks. 104 pitches, 76 for strikes. Kyle Hendricks' ERA on the year is 2.93. I mean, this guy doesn't get a lot of acclaim with the star-studded Cubs, but quietly a pretty good fifth starter, Kyle Hendricks, right?
I mean, hey, I was the one, I think a month ago, that was saying, like, that guy needs to step up. Someone you want pitching depth going into the playoffs. And you were like, they don't need Kyle Hendricks in the playoffs.
They don't.
Yeah, but aren't you a little bit happier knowing that he can go out there and pitch like that?
Yeah. And, okay. And it was
injuries happen.
Interesting comment from Joe Maddon before the game, too, today about Kyle Hendricks saying that he's got a little more tick on his fastball, which is helping out his other stuff. And he, and Kyle Hendricks also has never in his big league career walked more than three guys in a game, which, hey, if you don't beat yourself and you've got, you know, slightly above average stuff and you know how to compete – you can, he's, that's what, I mean, that's his formula. It's impressive that he's been able to, I mean, carve out a little niche. It's a possibility for Kyle Hendricks, a guy who was a borderline dude to make it in the big leagues, could end up being a starting pitcher on the team that wins the World Series. Did I just say that? I think I did.
Wow.
I mean, think about that from a Kyle Hendricks standpoint. What are you doing now, Kyle? You were at Dartmouth. You're a super smart guy. You were a later round pick. Maybe you'll make it, maybe you won't. Oh, yeah, I'm the starting pitcher on the 2016 Chicago Cubs, who are on pace to win
a bajillion games. By the way, we went to break. You were like, the Cubs are back on the map. Or what did you say? They
had a rough road trip.
I'm like, were they ever off the map?
They lost 2-3 to the Brewers.
Oh, not 2 out of 3.
Lost 2-3.
God forbid they lose a series.
Lost 2-3 to the Giants. Lost the first game to the Cardinals.
Oh, no.
Panic was starting to set in, Hoag.
Cubs panic.
Yeah, that's not rational.
Second week in a row as we do our radio show here, that two Royals run into each other right in front of our eyes.
White Sox about to close out Kansas City 7-1, hopefully. Top of 9.
I got two questions, though, for the listeners right now, 312-981-7200. One is, we do our Cubs, our North Side, South Side report brought to you by Vienna Beef. On the north side, the question you posed, who is the player you can least afford to lose on the Cubs right now? Mm-hmm. Because you could really debate Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Jake Arrieta. I think there's a good debate there. On the south side of town, I think the question is, with the news coming out here within the last hour, that the White Sox are reportedly in discussions to acquire James Shields, a 34-year-old. Very solid starter. I mean, you're talking about the kind of guy, the exact kind of guy you want to add to your rotation right now. Would you be willing to give up Tim Anderson, your top prospect, in that deal to get a 34-year-old starter, a guy you need, but again, 34 and owed $21 million each of the next three seasons? Are you willing to give up your young top shortstop, who, by the way, you could probably use here in the second half of the season and is killing it in Charlotte right now?
I wouldn't do it, and I'm watching this replay. This actually right now, this is a could be terrible injury for the Kansas City Royals. Salvador Perez, their catcher, got cracked into on a pop-up by the third baseman, who was not Mike Moustakas, because he just tore his ACL. I mean, this looks like a serious knee injury. And, I mean, Salvi is one of the...
The guy hit him right in the knee. Yeah, this is Moustakas' replacement, third.
Yeah, and so Salvador Perez is one of the best young catchers in all of baseball. He's being helped off the field. This is a very, very tough guy, and he looks like he's in enormous pain. They are walking him off, which is a better sign than being carried off, obviously.
Yeah, but remember last week, that collision between Moustakas and Alex Gordon. That's the play that happened on, right? We were sitting here, we watched it. It looked like Alex Gordon was knocked unconscious. And we were talking about that, but meanwhile, Moustakas apparently tore his ACL on the play.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that was the same play.
I think it was. It took him like 4 days to announce what was going on.
The guy that just ran into Salvi's, Chesler Cuthbert, he's new.
Cool.
Chesler, good old number 19.
Chesler?
Yes, and now he has being helped down the stairs of the
dugout. I mean, it looks not good. I love Salvador Perez.
Salvador Perez is a phenomenal guy and a phenomenal catcher, and he's a pretty good hitter, too, for that matter.
The Royals are so annoying because, like, to be in the same division as the Royals, like, they're just – I don't want to say you hate them because I don't hate them. Like, individually, how can you not like Salvador Perez? Lorenzo Cain is one of my favorite players in the entire league. And yet, as a team, these guys are just, they never go away. Like, right now, it's 7-1 ninth inning. Don't feel comfortable.
That if you're this young rookie who just ruined Salvador Perez, that would be an uncomfortable moment walking into the clubhouse.
Because what was he doing? Perez clearly had the ball. He caught it.
Well, it's
get out of the way.
But that's the third baseman's ball. I mean, you
if
don't,
he calls it,
right? You don't expect the catcher to be that far up the line. I mean, it was halfway between home and third. But
you got
to
call it. And if he didn't do it,
you do. You absolutely do. All right, we get back to baseball in a little bit. There's a guy by the name of LeBron James who's going to the NBA Finals for the sixth consecutive year.
Never heard of him.
Neither have I. 720 WGN. Winos!
Chicago Sports, spoken here. The beat is on.
720 WGN and WGNradio.com.
407, Cubs a winner. White Sox leading Kansas City 7-1, and Salvador Perez taken off with a knee injury. They're in the ninth at Kauffman Stadium. I'm Mark
Carr. That's not good.
That is not good if you're a Royals fan, which the guy is. We're about to talk to right now on the 720 WGN. Fox Sports is Nick Wright, who I used to do radio with back in Kansas City, and Nick used working with me to launch himself to a national level. Isn't that about the way it worked, Nick?
What happened to Salvador Perez?
Salvador Perez.
Well, the Royals, these guys keep just running into each other on foul balls that the White Sox hit.
You had a foul ball midway between home plate and third base. Mike Moustakas, of course, you know, with the ACL not around. So some guy by the name of,
Chester Cuthbert?
Yeah, him. He just came running down there like he was Eric Berry of the Chiefs and slammed into Salvador Perez's knee.
Oh, no. All right, well, that's totally changed my demeanor for this interview, but I'll try to power through. What's going on, fellas?
Since you just said that, Adam was out to dinner last night, and he's a diehard White Sox fan. He's having a nice meal with
I don't want to talk to him.
Yeah, okay, I'll turn my mic off. It's all right.
Well, he's out to dinner, though, with his lovely wife and a good friend, Adam Johns, who's a media guy as well, and his wife. And the Royals come back from 5-1 down to win, and Hogue ruins the dinner by going bad mood. I mean,
I didn't ruin the dinner, but I did, Nick. I did need a little bit of a pep talk I found my wife giving me a pep talk to get me back in the moment, enjoy the rest of the evening.
I got to tell you something, and I don't know you, so maybe this isn't my place, but that's a bad job by you. It's a regular season baseball game, man.
I know.
They're going to lose 90 or 70 of them, like even in a great, great season. Like if you had found out that Chris Sale blew out his arm, that's a reason to ruin dinner. But just because you lose a game, I don't think that's ruinable. I don't think you should let that ruin your evening. But that's just my opinion.
Well, and I respect that opinion. I agree with you 100%. I started that story by saying, hey, look, we're all about honesty here on our program here, Nick, and I was embarrassed to even bring it.
Hold on, real quick. If you're all about honesty, you might need a new co-host. I mean, Carm's known for a lot of things, but being terribly honest with the listener is not one of them.
That is just so incredibly unfair, and we have not worked together in radio fashion daily in a long time now. My transparency is just on the up and up, Nick.
It just bleeds through. Okay, well then I'm glad to hear that. What's going on, fellas?
And I would say that you slightly motivated me on that. But Nick, at the time when all he wanted me to do was talk about the dysfunction in my relationship on the air.
And then we can talk basketball, I promise. To the point to where the only way we ever got real honesty from him was one day he was talking to a young lady on his phone while sitting in the Royals radio booth.
Ooh.
And my engineer potted that mic up, not to put it on the air, but so we could record it. And we just played on the air 10 minutes of Mark Carmen making kissing faces and noises and just disgusting stuff with he and his girlfriend to really get him out of his shell. That really did happen.
That's fantastic, and we need to get our hands on that audio.
I'll see what I can do.
That really was maybe my favorite segment, even though it painted me in a horrendous light. All right, Nick, we're on here to talk all things with you because there's nowhere you can't go. But we will start with your favorite, which is the NBA and a guy by the name of LeBron James, who is in the finals for the sixth straight year. I know that you're partly related to LeBron by just,
Well, let me just put some context to it.
Go ahead.
Because what people want to say is, it's the Eastern Conference. You know, what's the big deal? Here's the big deal. In the last 50 years, if we take out people that have played with LeBron James, here are the guys that have made three straight NBA finals. Magic Johnson, Kareem, Jordan, Shaq, Kobe, Isaiah, Pippen, Bird. That's the full list of all-stars that have made three straight NBA finals. Nobody other than Bird's made more than three. He's made four. And now LeBron's done it six times. Let me give you just a couple more pieces of information. LeBron, in this six-year run, has played more playoff games than Charles Barkley, David Robinson, or Isaiah Thomas did in their entire careers. LeBron, over this run, has played 121 playoff games. It'll be at least 125, maybe 128. The second most in that span, aside from LeBron's teammates, is Kevin Durant at 83. So nearly 50% more than the guy who's in second place. And the, what made me want to look these things up is last night he rested for 37 seconds in the first 42 minutes of the game.
Yeah, Ty Lue is running him.
Well, I mean, and LeBron told him to. So think about that. It's year six of the most extended stretch of greatness in modern NBA history without a break, without ever missing a playoff game. It's playoff game 121, and he is going 41 and a half of the first 42 minutes. The guy's indefatigable. He seems uninjurable, and I think he is taken for granted. What did he do last night? 31, 11, 6, and 3 in a road elimination game to get to the NBA Finals, and nobody cares.
Well, it's
pretty impressive.
It's expected at this point. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's like there's no numbers that he's going to put up that's going
to. By the way, Mark, not to shift the conversation completely, but as the president of the Derrick Rose fan club that you are,
yeah,
how does that make all those stats that Nick just brought up?
As far as the indefatigable part of it, or what are we talking about?
Well,
the
fact I don't think you've ever heard of LeBron James sitting out a game with, quote, general soreness.
He missed a couple. You can wrap that one, Nick, because he did in the regular season sit some games. Just, I mean, very rarely, but they gave him a day off, which was smart. I mean, but
that's different than like
you can't compare.
Here's the thing, and this is where I mean, Rose has had some bad luck, and you watch Russell Westbrook as a Bulls fan, and you've got to just be sick to your stomach.
That's true,
because that's what Derrick Rose was supposed to be. But here's the part of it that I think it shouldn't be used to tear other people down, just to push LeBron up. He's the only star in the history of the NBA to never be injured. He's the only star in the history of the NBA to get an MVP vote every year of his career. But what's more impressive is that he's never been hurt. Even Michael had the fluke foot injury that cost him a year. But LeBron's never even had the fluke injury. So occasionally, he took a 2-week break to go to Miami last year. This year, he rested a few times. But in general, we are now in year 13 of sustained greatness without a break. It's remarkable.
Well, let me talk about I give LeBron a ton of credit.
Not really.
I give him some credits. Fine. I'll. But here's my problem with LeBron, and I'm fascinated by your defense of this. I don't even know if you have one, if you'll just concede the point. LeBron James embarrasses himself, and he embarrasses the league, and he embarrasses the sport when he does the ridiculous flopping act to try to sell a call that, to me, is so beneath a player of his caliber. Yet he continues to do it, has done it throughout these playoffs. Last night you had a rando, weird play where Kevin Love is getting knocked into by a Raptor who's like, and then hitting into LeBron. He's asking for an and one after he ran down the lane for three steps and no one touched him. He wants an and one. To me, it makes him disingenuous, the whole deal. I guess
if you're bothered by the flopping, I mean, there's no arguing that that bothers you. The point that I would make that I think is a fair one is any time, like, LeBron has to flop because these guys aren't strong enough to knock him off balance. He gets flagrantly fouled repeatedly without the call because he can power through it. And I think it was game 2 of this series. you had, I think it was Damari Carroll, I might be wrong, put him in a full bear hug while he was barreling down the lane. LeBron still got the shot off and made it. That was a flagrant foul that ended in an and one. So when you're so much stronger than these guys and you're repeatedly kind of getting the Shaq treatment from the refs, I think sometimes you're going to oversell things. But ultimately, once again, you guys said you try to be honest with the listeners. If your big complaint about LeBron is he's too histrionic in selling calls, well, then you just don't like him. Like, if that's what you're going to pick of a 13-year NBA career, here's my beef with the guy. You just said he embarrasses the league. If that, then just be honest. You don't like him because he's the closest thing we've seen to a guy that could touch Jordan's legacy, and because of that, you're threatened by him.
I'll grant all the threatening, and I'll grant the immaturity, and I'll grant all that. But it's still wrong, and that he does it. It's beneath him. I think he should just. It's not something that he needs to do, and.
It's a good counter argument though, because that guy, because if you're going to say he's 6'8", however many pounds he is, he should never be falling down, which is a fair point. That's like Nick said. I mean, they if he doesn't, because too many officials, we know the officials in the NBA suck, and there's too many bad calls there. They react too much to the player's reaction rather than the actual foul.
The best example of that, Adam, is last night. If people watched the game, Tristan Thompson elbowed Kyle Lowry dead in the head on a layup. I mean, it was clear. It looked intentional. Kyle Lowry took it on the chin, or took it on the face, really, and didn't react. About 4 minutes later, Kevin Love got elbowed by Bismack Biyombo in the head, which looked totally accidental. Kevin Love fell to the ground. The referees reviewed that one. Bismack Biyombo got a flagrant foul. They waved off the basket, and if there would have been a Game 7, he would have been out for it. The Tristan Thompson one was worse, but because he didn't react to it, the referees never reviewed it. Like, I think there is, you are incentivized to sell these calls.
I was enraged at the Biyombo. They did not call a foul on him, and they ended up taking the bucket away and whistling a flagrant. He's going to be out for Game 7 if they win. Are you kidding me?
No, it was terrible.
It's just completely absurd. All right, here, Nick, hang on. We're going to take a little quick timeout, and
I get a ruling on this, Nick? This inning started 7-1 White Sox in the ninth inning. The Royals, it's now 7-4, and the tying run is up to bat. If they blow this, am I allowed to have my energy for one segment fall down a little bit?
Yeah, no. If they blow if you blow a 7-1 ninth inning lead against a team that's, I think, a game back for the lead of the division, you're allowed to have it ruin at least an hour of your life.
Okay, thank you.
All right, quick timeout, a little bit more with Nick on 720 WGN. 7-6. Royals have the tying run on second base. David Robertson, White Sox closer, out of the game. Some reliever by the name of Tommy Conley. The Connell, you know him over there?
I think it's Canely. But...
Canely? Never seen him before in my life. How long has Canely been up?
A week, I think.
A week? All right.
They brought him up when, I don't know, someone got hurt.
Hey, Nick.
Yeah, but the White Sox are fine.
I don't know.
What just happened?
You just jumped in and out. You're fine. It's Nick Wright at Get Nick Wright on Twitter. Fox Sports with us here for a couple more moments.
You're fine. Drew Butera's up. Like, you have nothing to worry about.
Okay. Single ties
Nick,
it up.
Nick, what's your general opinion on managers in baseball? Because we have such a
huge... I don't think they matter.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah, really. I think that there's like three to five that help you, three to five that hurt you, and the other 20 are all the exact same.
Okay, that's basically what I think.
Would you say the same thing about NBA coaches?
For the most part, yes, except I think in the NBA there's like five that help you, 10 that really, really hurt you, and then the rest are mediocre. Like, I think there are more NBA coaches that actively hurt their team's chances to win than there are NBA coaches that help their team's chances to win.
How much credit do you give Billy Donovan in Oklahoma City? Because I think he deserves a ton.
That's tough. I think Billy Donovan's done a very nice job. If you'd asked me this 36 hours ago, I would have been much more glowing, because the thing that I thought he did the best, he screwed up on in the most recent game. What I thought was most impressive from Donovan is the big reason they beat the Spurs was the Cantor-Adams lineup. That lineup, the Spurs had no answer for it. And it was very clear 5 quarters into this series against the Warriors that Cantor was unplayable. You just can't play him. He's too bad defensively. And so he totally went away from him.
Got to interrupt you. Butera off the wall, double. We are tied at 7.
Sorry, White Sox fans.
That is a 6-run ninth inning. Hogue has left the studio. Adam Hogue is gone. Is out the door.
As
I shouldn't be celebrating this because I do want to see the Cubs-White Sox World Series. But we are tied up at 7. With a runner on second, it's 2 out. And that pitch was meat from whatever this reliever's name is, Conley.
To finish the point real quick, what was so smart was he just totally abandoned Cantor. And then in game 5, he went back to him. He went to him for 4 minutes in the first half. They got beat, I think, by 8 in those 4 minutes. And then the beginning of the fourth quarter, when Steph was resting and you're only down 4, they put Cantor back in, and guess what happened? They immediately gave up a 8-2 or a 6-0 run, and in 57 seconds while he was on the court. So, like, Cantor's unplayable. But in general, I think Donovan's done a really nice job. It would appear Donovan's a pretty damn good coach at any level.
Conley, wild pitch on trying to intentionally walk somebody.
Not intentional walk. He throws a wild pitch.
No way.
Runner at third, now 90 feet away. Will he go another wild one? This guy's trying to throw intentional balls that are like basically going over the plate. We should go Kelly Leak. What movie? Bad News Bears right now. Okay, fine. So that you're right. I agree with you, by the way, on Billy Donovan. He had a rough game 5, but... I still think that the way the Thunder are playing, he deserves credit for it. Hey,
do you think they're going to win tonight?
I do. I absolutely do.
I do too. And if they win, like, this is the thing. The only way the Cavs could win a title is if they were playing the Thunder. Like, they were drawing dead against the Spurs or the Warriors because you can't play Love and Irving against either one of those teams because they're so bad defensively and those teams are so great at executing. You can play those guys against the Thunder, not because the Thunder aren't a great offensive team, they are, but they don't beat you the way the Spurs and Warriors do, which is just find the weak spot on the defense. They beat you because Westbrook and Durant are great. And so, like, the only team that could have come out of the West that I believe the Cavs could beat is the team that it looks like is going to come out of the West, which is crazy.
All right, last thing for you, Nick.
Yeah.
Before we let you go here, we just talked about how managers don't matter, but I guarantee you we're going to be taking some phone calls as soon as this awful game gets done with about Robin Ventura. Is there any point, White Sox are now 4, if they lose this game, they'll be 4-13 in their last 17 games.
He's not going to.
Do you gain anything from firing Robin Ventura?
I think Karma's about to tell you I'm the wrong person to ask this question.
Okay.
I'd be making it up. I have no idea if you'd gain anything from firing Robin Ventura. I do know this, that whatever, and I apologize to the Chicago listeners, don't hate me for this, but if Robin Ventura is a bad manager, if you're right, God, I hope they keep him forever.
Well, I was going to say that there's no way you're going to say anything to that because you killed Ned Yost for years, and Ned Yost
I wanted everyone as recently as the year they went to the World Series and lost in 7 games. At the trade deadline of 2014, I was demanding they fire Yost and Dayton Moore. And since then, they've gone to a World Series and won a World Series, and it looks like they're about to be in first place in the division.
And they were probably in first place at that time, right?
No, at that moment, they weren't. At that moment, it looked like they weren't going anywhere. It's basically been the trade deadline of 2014 to now that the Royals have become a real baseball team.
It was so much fun when they weren't, but
they are really real now.
Yeah.
I mean, the way they just slap all these singles all over the place and they're never done, it's impressive.
Nick Wright, Fox Sports, you'll be watching him, you'll be seeing him. Nicky, just remember when you know, when you're on the set, you never would have gotten there if you hadn't worked with At the Carm.
Oh, it's totally accurate. It's totally true. I worked with you for years, and I realized, all right, see what he's doing. Make sure you do none of it, and your career should be fine.
See? There you go.
See, I think he held you back at least a year.
See, probably true. See you, Adam.
See you, Nick.
Bye, Nick. Nick Wright, at Get Nick Wright on Twitter, with a little NBA/Royal/Meltdown. The White Sox are now low. We have a wild pitch. Is that what happened? So we have second and third now willingly loading the bases with this guy. Who is this guy?
Nick Canely.
Canely, why would you load the bases if you want to rip on Robin Ventura? Why would you load the bases with a guy who can't find the strike zone? It's a bad idea.
The guy on third is the game.
I understand.
These other runners don't matter.
Yeah, but when you... When
so you might as well load the bases to get options at every base.
Okay, that's we disagree on baseball strategy.
Why? Well, why? How does that hurt you?
Because you have to throw strikes to the next guy.
He was already at third.
But if this... But
oh, I see what you're
next
saying.
Next guy walks, I'd rather pitch to somebody with a base open than pitch with the bases loaded. Especially with a guy who can't
even... can go either way. This guy can't throw an intentional walk to save his life. How is he still in the game?
And it was derived.
Why was David Robertson in as long as he was?
Let's get to news. We have a break before news, Dan. Are we that late? We are that late. All right. News in 2 minutes on 720 WGN.
What? No, why?
Chicago sports spoken here.
World of sports is going on.
This is The Beat.
Well, this is like even uncomfortable for me because I like to have fun when I'm doing the show, and I like to.
Can you just admit one thing? You are rooting for the Royals there.
Well, I
could hear it in your voice as you reacted. Well, how could you swing at that?
Yeah,
that was something that happened during the news break. You were yelling at one of the Royals players for swinging at a ball in that situation.
Well, it was just so moronic that you have got Tommy Canely on the mound who can't throw a strike to save his life. I mean, he literally walked Ibner, who just had the game winner 10 times, but he kept on swinging. I'm like, what are you doing? I feel bad for you right now. I do. I want to see the White Sox win. I want baseball relevancy on both sides of town. A lot of good people at the White Sox, the whole deal. But, you know, when you lose being up 7-1 in the ninth, I mean, at some point, all you got to do is laugh. You just have to laugh at that. I mean, that's incredible patheticness. You can either do one of two things. I'm going to choose it to be lighthearted about it. You being a diehard and have 17 White Sox jerseys, I can understand having a different feeling right now.
But a lighthearted Sox fan or not, you've been in first place. You're now 4-13 in your last 17 games. You could be out of first place by the end of today.
Mm-hmm.
That's unacceptable.
How do you...
Whether it's the players, it's the manager, whatever, it's unacceptable.
I mean...
Something needs to be done.
You want... Oh, okay. Now we're going there.
How can you not after this game? You blow a 7-1... Now, you can blame it all on David Robertson, but how many questions can we bring up here? First of all, why is your closer in when it's 7-1?
That's fair.
Okay, that's one. I don't necessarily have a problem with it. The White Sox haven't been winning much, so Robertson hasn't been out there a lot. So if you want to get him the work, fine, I can understand it. He walked two batters, though, and I think if I have this right, he went... I'm not sure if the order's right, but he gave up a single, he gave up a double, and he walked two guys in four straight batters right there. Pretty obvious he doesn't have his stuff, right?
Yeah.
So why was he in until it was 7-6?
Well, listen, he gave up, let's see, he gave up four hits, walked two. He was responsible for six runs, all of them earned.
You bring in Tommy Canely, who couldn't even throw a ball accurately on an intentional walk.
You would think after the Canely intentional walk experience that they might have had somebody else to go to.
And
but their bullpen is overused and
bad. It's awful.
There's like nowhere to go. So, but then the, you know, an hour ago we had James Shields rumors and a White Sox winner on our hands. Now it's like back to, oh my God, you need to rework the entire bullpen and you just lost a game that you absolutely never lose, but you lost it today. Pretty incredible.
Can we bring it back? I think right at the beginning of the Nick Wright interview, it was 7-1, and I said I don't feel comfortable.
You did say that, which
is... You can't feel comfortable. First of all, it's the Royals. They're never out. And second, it's the White Sox, and apparently they can't hold a lead. They've blown two leads. They were 5-1 yesterday and 7-1. And you don't have to argue very much to or try, let me rephrase, you don't have to try very hard to put an argument together that last night was on Robin Ventura and the way that bullpen was managed.
I've always liked Robin. I've never been, when you're talking about in the offseason, and we can, which move in particular did you mind last night? Because it's hard for me, when your bullpen is terrible, no matter where he turns, I mean, what do you want the guy to do? But I just, when the White Sox, when you hear White Sox brass in the offseason say, Robin's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's tiring.
From 10 at night to 7 the next day, he's great. Dude, I don't care what he does during the off time. How does he manage the game? I mean, I guess I do care a little, but that's not completely accurate. Sure, it matters how he whatever, motivates guys to come ready to play and how he handles defeats or victories, whatever. But you got to know what you're – I mean, you got to be skilled during the game too. I mean, you can't separate those two. It's a ridiculous statement. I don't like – I like a laid – You can't just be – he's too laid back for me. Let's put it that way.
Fine, but let's stick to like – let's talk about today. You were I can't remember at this point if we were on the air or during a break. But they intentionally walked the bases loaded.
Mm-hmm. No, that was on the air. I said, do not walk the bases loaded. You have a guy who can't throw strikes.
And they intentionally walked Jared Dyson.
Yeah, who can't hit.
Who has a lifetime batting average of .256.
Very bizarre.
.256.
Jerry's texting in, by the way. If you want to celebrate the White Sox loss and be a complete troll, you can. 620, Jerry, let's go Royals. 312-981-7200. In a real conversation, what do you do right now if you're the White Sox?
I mean, if you're going to fire Robin, I think you got to do it today.
They're not firing Robin Ventura today, though. You know that's not happening. There's no way that's happening.
I'm not asking will they. I'm asking should they.
Fair. Okay.
Do you think that, that should... Wait. I'm not even saying they should, but don't you think that should be a conversation that's had today?
Who's going to come down Hawk from the booth? I'll manage this team. I'm tied with Todd Frazier.
You just have Rick Renteria take over.
Ricky, so okay.
And I'm not sure that fixes anything.
I mean, does that make you better, Ricky Renteria? That doesn't do anything for me. If you're going to go out, listen, if the White Sox are going to fire Robin Ventura and you're going to go out and get the best manager out there, Ron Gardenhier would excite me on some level.
I like Ron.
That's a guy that certainly knows the division and gets his guys to play above their capabilities, which the White Sox have not done the last couple of years. There's one guy. If you were going to do something like that, okay, I'd get it. Rick Renteria?
What's wrong with Ricky Renteria?
Oh, come on. He's as vanilla as the day is long. You're just
more vanilla than Robin?
All you're doing is substituting a guy that smiles more. They're both equally disinteresting. And both just fine, chummy fellows. But Renteria smiles more.
By the way, Paul Sullivan is in Kansas City covering this game. He's going to join us at 5:35. I can't wait to get that reaction out of the locker room. And I'm so happy Sully's out there.
7-7-3. I won't watch another game unless Robin's out. Till then, let's go Cubs. I'm assuming that's a White Sox fan.
This is bad, dude. Should I take responsibility?
In what way?
Well, you do realize that this all started when I wrote that column.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Are 4-13 since I wrote the I'm wrong about the White Sox column.
Yeah, you basically apologized to the whole organization, threw your baseball knowledge under the bus. You said that Rick Hahn was a genius, Kenny Williams too.
That's not what I wrote.
I understand, but you...
And I don't know if you noticed, but I never wrote in there that Robin Ventura was a good manager.
I noticed.
I kind of left him out of there.
I loved that piece by you. So
doesn't look too good now, does it?
Let's take a deep breath here. Let's look at the standings. Where are we here? Where are they right now? The White Sox are 27-23, 4 over, which ties them.
4 over. They were like 12 over.
Yeah, they're 4 over, tied with the Royals, basically 26-22. And the Indians at 25-21. So you got three teams all sitting at 4 over. The Tigers at 1 over, and the Twins are atrocious. I mean, the simple question, really, I think for Sox fans is: have you seen the best part of your season? Has the best part of your season come and gone? And if it has, I mean, you will see a change in the manager's seat if that's the case.
Because well, this is just going to keep happening. I mean, they're just going to keep losing.
Listen, if you can't hold a 7-1 lead, I mean, who in that bullpen do you trust right now? You would have said Robertson before today and no one else.
Look, I'm not disputing that the players are the ones to blame here. I mean, I think this team's decent. I like what Rick Hahn did this offseason. I'm not sure he could have done more. What more could he have done?
Well, I'll tell you what he could have done. He could have gone the absolute opposite direction.
And blown it all up.
Right. It's not
Reinsdorf. That's not what they're going to do.
Well, see, people say that, but like they waived. They're famous for the white flag trade. They were 3.5 games out of first at the end of July, and they went the other way. They've done unpopular things. I don't understand why this whole we have to win now mindset the White Sox have. People aren't going to come out anyway.
You're 20 years ago almost.
Well, but they don't operate any differently. Nothing's really changed. I'll give you another guy, by the way. We were talking about this before the show. Just forgot about it. You want to get rid of Robin? You want to bring back Ozzie? That changed things over there.
I mean, I'm not opposed to that. It sounds crazy, but I'm not opposed to that.
I mean, they never do it.
No.
Ever. But it'd be incredibly entertaining. 847, Robin is an awesome player and a great team leader, but a lousy manager. In addition, the White Sox have crappy relief pitching. Whomever picks them to win the division had to be on drugs. No one picked them to win the division. But when they got off to that great start, people started to think that, oh, maybe they can have a surprising year like you see in baseball happen all the time. I'll give you another negative. Chris Sale, he ain't going to pitch any better than he's pitched already.
No.
I mean,
and Quintana's been great.
Right. So there's two guys that you would think are going to regress somewhat to the mean.
I mean, you had Miguel Gonzalez last night give you a good enough to win.
Are you going to be able to do the rest of the show?
I'm doing it right now.
I know, but like we're going to go
312-981-7200. If I gave you right now, Robin fired today, you have your choice of Ozzie Guillen, Ron Gardenhier, or Ricky Renteria. Where are you going?
312-981.
I'm going Ozzie.
7200. We'll do it next. 720 WGN.
If they blow this, am I allowed to have my energy for one segment fall down a little bit?
If you blow a 7-1 ninth inning lead against a team that's, I think, a game back for the lead of the division, you're allowed to have it ruin at least an hour of your life.
That was about 25 or so minutes ago, Adam Hogue.
Great work. Downtown Danny Long pulling that back.
At Get Nick Wright with us. Wow. You're doing okay. It's a tough day for White Sox fans everywhere. You're the leader of White Sox Nation right now. 312-981-7200.
Is it bad that the thing that's bothering me the most right now is that awful slide by Austin Jackson in the third base the inning before?
Well, if you missed that play, Jackson should have been safe at third, but he basically overslid the bag.
He didn't overslide it. He slid next to the bag. Like if the bag's here, he slid to the right of it while the ball was coming in and he got tagged out. He was there in plenty of time to be safe, and he chose to, like, not hit the bag. That's the kind of crap right now that cannot be tolerated.
Hashtag fire Robin.
I'm dead serious. Think Joe Maddon would let that slide?
Well, see, that's hard because, like, what's he going to do? There's nothing he can do in the moment. You want him to bench Austin Jackson tomorrow? Is that what you want him to do? I mean, maybe.
Say something to him in the dugout right then. That's unacceptable. Get your head in the game. We're on a four-game losing streak. I don't care if it's 7-1.
Yeah, but okay, that's fine.
Slide in the third base like it's a tie game in the ninth inning.
I'm just more comfortable blaming Austin Jackson if you want to pick out
again,
one play.
I'm not denying that these players are to blame. But you can't do anything about that right now. You can't release the whole team.
No, you can't.
David Robertson should be able to hold a 7-1 ninth inning lead. There's no debating that. But again, why was he in the game as long as he was? Why did it take till he had already given up 5 runs and had 2 other guys on base before you took him out?
847 texting and Scott from Lyndhurst. If I'm a White Sox manager, I let my starters throw until their arms fall off. 2 days in a row like this is nauseating. 773 says, I hear Ryan Sandberg's available. Why not him or Pauly since they like to hire retired players? 773 says, Ozzie would be hilarious, a big-time move on the level of Billy Martin Yankees. You got a lot of problems going on right now, but the sliding at third is like number 1,700,000.
But it's not. It's the little things in baseball. It's always the little things in baseball.
Get an out. How about that little thing? You're up 7-1 in the ninth.
And by the way, we should point out that a tailor-made double play ball straight to the second base bag, the game would have been over, but David Robertson, and I'm not blaming him, I'm just saying that this is sort of the bad luck that you have when you're in a slump like this. David Robertson tries to make a play on the ball, deflects it into right field.
But that's effort. I mean, he's...
I'm not criticizing it, I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying right now, when you're in a slump like the way you are, that if he lets that ball go through or he misses it, the game's over.
Right.
Because Brett Lawrie grabs it, steps on the bag, throws the first double play, game over.
And there, my friends, is the game of baseball. These things happen. Sometimes you're trying a little too hard when you should try less. We'll be back to get in tomorrow. We'll still be in first place, even though we're not in first place anymore.
Will they be?
Is Hawk alive right now? What is Hawk doing right now? Does he go and sit? I feel like he's like in Robin's office and they're just having a deep discussion. Robin, I'll tell you this, and I've been around this game a long time. I've never seen a bullpen as pathetic and inept as the jokers that you've been left to. If I had anything to do with it, I'd kick them all out of here. I'm the Hawk.
And by the way, Cleveland up 8-1. So the White Sox right now in a three-way tie for first place. That's about to end.
All right, quick timeout. We'll get into the 5 o'clock hour. We're going to hear from Paul Sullivan down in Kansas City. And if you wanted to celebrate another Cubs win, we can do that. Because one team in this town is playing some good baseball over there at Wrigley Field. Does that add on to your pain?
No, not at all.
Okay.
For me, they're two separate teams. Yeah.
You're a mature man. 720 WGN.
Talk about what you love about Adam Hogue for a second.
Adam Hogue is the best Bears beat reporter of all time.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
All time.
You're listening to The Beat on 720 WGN.
That's still not true.
Of all time, baby.
But I appreciate it, Mitch. You're our guy.
Like Michael Jeffrey Jordan. On the same level. Hogue headlines.
Yeah, we'll keep you updated on what's going on with the White Sox. There are rumors about an hour ago that they're possibly
quitting,
trading for James Shields. And then since then, they blew a 7-1 lead to the Royals. And now there's a lot of talk, probably none of it legitimate by any legitimate sources. But we're hearing from obviously a lot of fans, and maybe I've brought it up here too during the show, that if there's ever a time to fire Robin Ventura, do you do it now? And we'll keep that conversation going. Paul Sullivan's out in Kansas City covering the White Sox right now. He'll join us in about 20 minutes. Can't wait to talk to him about what's going on there in KC, because I imagine that clubhouse today, not all that good. However, this music means it's time for Hogue's headlines. Mm. And we'll get to, I think my soul right now needs to get away from the White Sox too. So how about this story? Georgia's athletic director, the Georgia Bulldogs down in Athens. His name's Greg McGarrity, and he apologized to the Athletic Association's board of directors following a disclosure that rapper Ludacris, familiar with Ludacris?
Of course. I'm a big Ludacris guy. Listen to it every night.
Yeah, you look. Yeah.
In the morning.
When I see you, I go, Luda.
Right?
Yeah. Luda was paid $65,000 to perform at the school's spring football game. That's probably not the problem, but he was also provided liquor and a box of condoms.
Hey, Ludy.
This was in the contract.
Well.
Hey, I need a box of condoms in the contract.
If I'm going to be on your campus for a whole weekend, you know that I'm Ludacris, right?
I don't know if what's the bigger story, that he requested that in the contract or that it was granted by Georgia.
Well, I'm a big fan
of fine athletic university.
So it's important, Adam, to practice safe sex.
Oh, I agree.
And Ludacris was on board with that.
Yeah.
At least he was out there with his intention. I'm coming to your campus, and I'm Ludacris. Please give me condoms.
The performance was less than 15 minutes, too. That's the
Ludacris had places to go. He wanted to get after his gift basket.
Exactly. Hey, did you see this story this week? During the middle of a Pirates and Diamondbacks game earlier this week, Tony La Russa now works for the Diamondbacks.
Mm-hmm.
He is the Diamondbacks' chief baseball officer. And Pirates TV play-by-play guy, Greg Brown. Again, I don't know why Tony La Russa was paying attention to the Pirates broadcast. Like, maybe it was just on in the booth and they had the sound on. But Greg Brown was talking about during the game that La Russa had a history of retaliatory pitches during his managerial days.
Let me guess, Tony didn't like that.
Tony, not only did I like it, barged into the booth in the middle of the game and confronted the guy.
Tony's an idiot.
Do you have my ENPS thing on over there, buddy? If you could turn that on for me.
I got you. We're good.
All right. This was Greg Brown a couple days later, because this didn't get out publicly until Tony La Russa talked to an Arizona newspaper about it. So then Greg Brown felt the need to address it.
At that time, I was on with Steve Lass on the TV side, and I mentioned that these two teams, I said earlier, they have a history going back to the Goldschmidt McCutcheon incident of a couple years ago. It was pointed out, actually, that a year before that, James McDonald had hit Aaron Hill, then of the Diamondbacks. And went on to say, and my exact words were, there he is, as our director, Pete Toma, took a shot of the visiting general manager's booth, and chief baseball officer Tony La Russa, the Hall of Fame manager, as Mercer throws out Segura one away. My exact words were, there he is as manager of the Cardinals, A's, and White Sox. Always believed that you had to, well, essentially retaliate, even though Caminero wasn't trying to hit Segura. And then in the when the final outs were made in that bottom half of the inning, I was startled when we were about to come back from a commercial break to be standing there alongside was none other than Tony La Russa, who was really upset with what I had said. And I took my headset off and I went back. I took this heated discussion back behind the curtain here so that we would not be in public view. And I have always respected Tony La Russa. In fact, to the point where I've defended him over the years, with going back to his days as manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, much to the chagrin of many around, speaking more about fans than anybody else. But, I mean, over the years, he's been a controversial figure, but I have always defended him. I've liked him. And I said as much to him in this, again, very heated argument that we had. And I was startled that he would leave his general manager booth and in the middle of a ball game come in and disrupt the broadcast.
I mean, how ridiculous is that?
It's
so unprofessional.
Well, it's maybe the most lack of self-awareness you can have.
It's not even like what he said was all that bad.
He said, right, and Tony...
And it's probably fair, and if considering Greg just quoted himself, it didn't even sound like it was all that, like, aggressive or uncalled for or anything.
I just don't think that anything of what Greg said there was inaccurate. No one would dispute that. Cardinals fans, Cardinals upper management, whoever you want to pick that Tony's worked with in his baseball career, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why he's a great manager. I mean, he's a no-nonsense guy.
And you're going to go interrupt the broadcast.
And that's the other part of it.
Guy.
Dude, and listen, you're Mr. Baseball and you're super successful, and I'd love you to manage my baseball team. That'd be a good hire for the White Sox, although he was fired by Hawk back in the day.
I'm good.
Okay, but the point is that you just because you're Tony La Russa, you don't get to have a meltdown in the middle of the game.
No.
You don't get to interrupt the broadcast.
And again, it's important to point out that Greg Brown, the voice of the Pirates, didn't even want to bring that up publicly, that it happened. Like, a couple days went by. But you know how this works, Carm. Something like that happens, it's going to get around to the press real quick. Did you hear about what Tony La Russa did today? And then at that point, a writer for one of the Arizona newspapers got Tony on the record, which, by the way, Tony, don't talk about it. So he goes and does an interview, and at that point, Greg feels like he needs to defend himself. So I don't have a problem with it bringing up on the broadcast.
It always amazes me that people who are in that level of position to make that type of dough and have had that much success, they care about what's being said on TV or written in the paper. Dude, you don't need to worry about it. You should be above it.
Hey, this is another Carm contribution to Hoax Headlines.
Sweet.
This is from Jesse Rogers this week on ESPNChicago.com. To wear a cup or not wear a cup? That was the question put to Chicago Cubs first baseman Anthony Rizzo and his teammates on Tuesday afternoon after the subject of getting hit in the part of the body that came up during the NBA playoffs, because this was an issue with right Draymond Green's kicking people in the groin.
Yep. The old shot to the lower region.
Well, Rizzo told ESPN Chicago, I don't wear a cup. It's just not comfortable for me. I don't think our infielders do. A poll was taken in the Cubs clubhouse later in the day and revealed that some do and some don't. The answers tended to align with the players' personalities. By the way, what does that mean?
It means if you wear a cup, you're a rigid, do things right, type A type of guy. And if you don't, you're a relaxed dude like me. I don't wear a cup.
So which players do you want to know if they wear a cup? This seems like something you would be interested in.
I mean, I read the piece. It doesn't surprise me that Chris Bryant wears a cup.
Worn one his whole life, he says.
That Ben Zobrist wears a cup.
Ben Zobrist wears one.
Yeah, it was shocked that people don't.
Maybe the most surprising non-cup wearer is shortstop Addison Russell, Jesse Rogers right. That seems like a position where you could use one. My hands are too good, Russell said with a smile. I just feel like the feeling of not having anything there, it's not comfortable with a cup. I'm pretty confident in my picking ability.
I mean, I've played high-level softball of the recreational variety for my entire 20-year post-college career. Never been hit there. No, I don't play a lot of infield anymore.
I wore a cup my whole baseball career, which ended in high school. Never got hit once. It was not comfortable either.
It's not comfortable. Can't run as fast.
Didn't like it.
Right. I get it.
By the way, the story there is that Jesse Rogers actually went around the clubhouse and asked all these players if they wear a cup.
Yeah, Ben Zobrist was my favorite response because he seemed legit like angry by the question. Are you kidding me? You're asking me about whether I wear a cup? Yes, I wear a cup. Now get out of my face.
By the way, if I know ESPN at all from the stories I hear about their editors, that was mandated from Bristol, I bet. Hey, this is going on in the NBA playoffs. Can you please go ask your team if they wear a cup or not?
I think that's a fair leap. I doubt that Jesse came up on his own. I'm going to go ask the cup question.
Yeah, because it happened in an NBA game. Like, if it happened in baseball. All right, let me quickly get one more in here. I know we're running short on time.
We got tons of time.
The Miami Marlins are suing their fans.
Yeah, it's
this
awesome.
Is like the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
I love this story. Go ahead.
I'm trying to find them. Okay, what's this guy's name? It's, I'm sorry. Mickey Axelband. He's been a season ticket holder since 1993. He's 59 years old. The story points out he's a bald vegetarian.
Hashtag bald vegetarian.
Last year, the Marlins sued Axelband, alleging that he had illegally backed out of a 2-year season ticket deal. He might have reacted angrily, but that's just not the kind of guy he is. Quote, I wasn't shocked, just disappointed, he said. After all these years, I wondered, why now? Axelband isn't alone. In fact, the Marlins have sued at least 9 season ticket holders and luxury suite owners since 2013. That virtually never happens in sports, experts say. 2 stadium vendors are also locked in court battles with the team, both alleging the Marlins promised robust crowds and then didn't deliver.
Is that the best? The vendors, that's the part that I love.
So the vendors are suing the team.
You promised if I came to work here that there'd be a lot of people watching your games and I'd make some dollars. Now I'm coming out here. Maybe they have some contract. They have to be there X amount of nights or else they lose their gig and they're going out there for $30 and they don't feel it's worth it, but they want to keep their job because if they ever get good, they want to be able to come back and make the money. That's probably what that lawsuit's about.
There's another guy here that says, quote, you bamboozled us for, great word, you bamboozled us for this ballpark, and now you have the audacity to sue a small businessman, says Rene Pratt, who went into bankruptcy after his Sir Pizza franchises failed at the ballpark. Quote, I lost it all. I lost my business, and you're coming after me?
Seems
the Marlins declined comment for the story.
I bet they did.
In the Miami New Times.
Didn't the Miami Marlins, then the Florida Marlins, beat the Cubs in the 03 playoffs? Isn't that the most ridiculous thing ever to lose to a team that doesn't even deserve to have a team when you're up 3-1? Whenever I hear the Marlins, that's what swirls in my head, just so we can all
have
a point of reference.
You know, my dad, he still hates the Baltimore Orioles. And you go, why would a White Sox fan hate the Baltimore Orioles?
But at least
1983.
But at least Baltimore's like a credible organization, so to a point. Like they had the Earl Weaver Orioles. Like that was a real team.
You're right. They got some history.
Wait, the Marlins, the San Diego Padres, the the Padres of 1984 deserve to beat the Cubs? Why did this just come up? Why did this just happen? Seems like I'm living in the past right now. Cubs won today, 4-1. The White Sox blew a 7-1 ninth inning lead and lost to the Royals.
Wait, they did?
If you're just joining us, yes, they did. 8-7. White Sox go down to the Royals. Kansas City can sweep out the Sox and move past them in the standings tomorrow.
Chris Sale's pitching tomorrow.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
They moved him back up?
Yeah.
Okay. Originally, he
was. He did not pitch well the other night.
That was another thing, too. Originally, he was. Then they bumped him back so he would get an extra day of rest to pitch against. And so he pitched against the Mets on Monday. And now I guess, okay, they moved him back.
To Sunday.
So he'll pitch against the Royals, which I would agree with that move.
They need him to stop the bleeding tomorrow. Yeah,
I mean, might as well just throw him every day at this point. You're all in. Just throw the guy until his arm falls off.
Well, if you missed it, rumors out there, a report in San Diego saying the White Sox are in talks with the Padres to acquire James Shields, 34 years old, $21 million a year on that contract. White Sox fans, is that something you would want? And if it cost you Tim Anderson, at this point, no. That's the other thing. You really look at this team, and maybe you're the one. We need a break. But do you think they're good?
I think they're interesting.
Okay. That says it all.
I'm not going that far.
2016 White Sox. They're interesting.
Move over, Porky, because Cow is king. This week, Brittany and Elliot are checking out the best beef in town. Chicago's best, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. Paul Sullivan will be with us after the 5:30 news. Little open phone lines right now, Cubs and Sox fans. Cubs, we're asking the Cubs question of the day is, who's the number one guy that the Cubs can ill afford to lose? We've had the Kyle Schwarber injury. We had the Jason Hayward scare. But who's the one guy that you absolutely cannot lose if you want to have a little Cub talk here? 312-981-7200. He's Adam Hoge. He'll be okay. I'm Mark Carmen. It's 720 WGN. Some interesting responses to the Cubs guy you would least like to lose. We have the standard from the 630 for sure, Arrieta, which is hard to argue. My guy Vooch, the Vucci Chismo, might have a little allegiance here. He loves his paisan, Tommy La Stella, who I do enjoy a little Tommy La Stella, even though fielding can be a challenge for Tommy La Stella at times. The one that I find the most interesting from the 630, Ben Zobrist. I didn't realize coming into this year, because I haven't spent a ton of time watching Ben Zobrist play baseball,
yeah,
as to how good that guy is.
So here's a...
He is phenomenal.
Yeah. Ben Zobrist has been one of my favorite players. So I sort of... You know me. I'm like a... I'm not a baseball geek, but you know how much I love the game. And I really appreciate, like, when I get mad about Austin Jackson sliding into third... Like, of all the things I get mad about today with the White Sox blowing a 7-1... lead, like, that's what I'm most mad about, because I have just like such respect for guys that play the right way, and it bothers me when guys don't. So Ben Zobrist has been one of my favorite players for a long time. I don't think I've played fantasy baseball for like 5 years, so this goes back a long ways to when he would have been on my fantasy team. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started to fall in love with the guy, because I would watch some of his games when he was with the Rays, and like, he just did everything right. He just did everything. Like, he's not a superstar, but he just does things the right way. And that was like when he was just like sort of breaking out, was almost a utility guy. I don't even think he was playing every day. And a Lorenzo Cain on the Royals right now is another one of those guys that I just absolutely love watching play. Runs hard, catches everything, fast.
Love Lorenzo
Cain. Hits the ball, has some power.
I'm a big Lorenzo Cain fan, but he does get hurt all the time.
That's
although
problem.
He hasn't in a while, but early in his career, he was always on the DL. More text coming in. David Ross is hitting well in an MVP candidate. That's a true statement. David Ross is on an MVP pace, from at least historically where you thought he would be. What's up, Dan Long? Who's your guy?
Just going back to Zobrist, you could make a strong case for him. Just to look at his month of May, he's had two separate hitting streaks, one of 9 games. He went hitless in a game, and then another right now 14-game hitting streak. 39 hits, 22 batted in, an OPS of 1.171. And we still got 2 days left in the month.
Ben Zobrist is one of those guys, too, that does, I think, like, right now his sheets are perfectly tucked into his bed. I don't think there's a dish in his sink. I think that, do you know who his wife is? Juliana Zobrist, who is a Christian music American singing superstar as well. I mean, he's got an interesting little gig going on here, Ben Zobrist. Mary, I mean, how many guys can say that in MLB, that their wife is a singer?
Not many.
And
that's pretty cool.
You're talking about a guy also that if you
I'd like to be Ben Zobrist.
That would work. You're talking about a guy who's playing second base but can also play left and can also play right and can also lead off and can hit in the middle or could hit two and do anything.
That's what I'm talking about. That's why he can do anything. I love that about him.
He's
like your ultimate utility guy. But he's so good that you need him in the lineup every day.
I mean, I was worried when they signed him 34 years old. You're giving him $14 million a year for 4 years. He's going to be 38. But, I mean, he's almost earning that full $56 million this year. I mean, he's...
Yeah.
That dude is awesome. All right, quick time. I will get into the 5:30 news. And then Paul Sullivan from your Chicago Tribune on 720 WGN.
Now back to the beat.
720 WGN.
We're going to get an update on Adam Hoge's move and how he's inconveniencing his friends or not, and Adam Hoge's cable.
Which has been themes on the shows the last couple weeks, and there's been some movement on both fronts. I mentioned that Paul Sullivan is going to join us. He is going to join us. He's on deadline and dealing with the nonsense that is the Chicago White Sox right now out in Kansas City. So he's going to probably join us after 6 now. He's obviously got to take care of his newspaper duties before he gives us his gracious time.
That's exactly right. He has a job to do, and he's very generous to join us whenever he can.
Hopefully he does his job better today than David Robertson did.
Or Robin Ventura, who the pile-on is continuing. And
If you're a White Sox fan out there that's banging your head against your steering wheel because of what happened today, when you get home or in a safe spot, maybe pull over, take out your phone. Do not do it while you're driving. But go find at Wright Sox, Wright Sox, WRITESOX on Twitter, at Wright Sox, and just read the rant
that
went on there. It's fantastic, and I can't read it on the air, otherwise I would, but there's much bleeping going on.
Significant profanity, which
it'll make you feel better.
It definitely worked for you.
It made me feel a lot better.
You had a good break. The question out there for the Cub fan, 312-981-7200. Where do you want to have the World Series parade? That and the other one for real is who can the Cubs least afford to lose? Who cannot get hurt? 708, Cubs can't afford to lose Chris Bryant. He's the glue of this Cubs team. Also, it's National Beef Day. Half-price sandwiches at Bona Beef today. Great show from Charlie. Thank you, Charlie, for the sandwich suggestion. And I actually, that's my guy. Chris Bryant, if I may wax poetic on the superstar that is good old number 17. Chris Bryant, the other day, Anthony Rizzo gets a day off. He's at first base. Then he goes back to his regular position and plays third. Then Kyle Schwarber gets hurt at the start of the season. Well, we'll just throw Bryant out and left. Then
how about when he played three positions in one inning?
Right, I was going to get to that.
Sorry.
Then Jason Hayward struggling and needs a day off. Let's put him in right. And then we're going to have some weird situation where the bases are loaded. We need you to do literally everything all in one inning, and yeah, I'll do that. Then Chris Bryant comes to the plate and he hits a bomb. Then Chris Bryant comes to the plate and he legs out a double. Then Chris Bryant's on the base pass and he steals second base or goes first to third on a tight play. He's always hustling. He plays every single position. He hits for power. He hits in the middle of the lineup. He's a class guy. He's tremendous at repping Express. There's nothing that the guy's, I mean, this is a $30 million a year ball player. I mean, that's the type of dough he's going to get. And
he's worth it.
And he's worth it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think this guy's ever going to be in trouble. I don't think he's ever not going to play hard for you. And he does.
Well, I'm not disputing that, but we don't necessarily know Chris Bryant yet.
We don't, but we've seen him in a lift ad, and he was phenomenal as a drive. Like I
don't get any, I don't get any vibes from him that he's going to cause any distractions.
You saw him with his father at the home run derby and saying, "Hey, Dad, can you pay attention?" Remember that moment where they were?
Yeah,
I mean,
or when he surprised that Mesa baseball team.
Right.
That was cool.
Which is incredibly cool. And maybe there's a whole closet of Chris Bryant that we don't know, but I'm highly skeptical that exists at this point. I mean, he's pretty consistent. He's going to be like a Cub Derek Jeter. I mean, this guy's, it's early, but I just don't see him as somebody that's ever going to be in the public eye for negative things. And at some point, the Cubs are going to have to pay him. But I think that's your guy. 6-3-0 texting, you can't lose Arrieta. Well, that's true, too. You got to have a number one pitcher. But I just... Yeah,
but Chris Bryant plays every day. As good as Arrieta is, and you need starters, he only plays every 5 days. I think that's important.
Which is why when the Cubs drafted Chris Bryant over the pitchers who were available at the time, for one part, they were betting on a known quantity. This dude is going to hit. We believe in Chris Bryant. There was that. And the other side of it is, too, like, hey, man, you know, the way they've built the whole team, we're just going to build a team that's going to score a ton of runs.
Who was drafted ahead of Chris Bryant?
That was the Sonny Gray and Dan Long. You got this for me?
Yeah, Houston took Gray, the pitcher, or Mark Appel. Mark Appel
and Sonny Gray.
And that, not Sonny Gray, it was some guy never did anything. Jonathan Gray, I think it was.
Yeah. There was
And then they never signed Appel, right?
He went back in was that the year that he went back in the draft? All I know is that there were two.
Like, how do you not, how can you not sign a known commodity?
Because you're the Astros.
But, like, too many teams do this. They draft the 16-year-old kid out of high school, 17 or 18 or whatever, instead of... Is it just because of the age? I mean, if there's one thing I want to give the White Sox credit for, like, you nabbed Chris Sale straight out of college. He was pitching, like, a month later.
That was a phenomenal pick. The Royals could have had him. I was working in Kansas City at the time, and they picked Christian Colon. And then Sale was in the majors already dominating. I'm like, I think they might have blown that one.
But people knew that. People knew that he was major league ready. Like, I don't understand, like, why.
People forget, though, that he was a reliever at the time. Nobody knew that he was
going to. You go so much upside out of, like, an 18-year-old kid, but that guy has to start in rookie ball and climb his way up the minors instead of a dude that you're like, okay, he might not be a Hall of Famer, but he can help us tomorrow. And in Chris Sale's case, he's on his way to the Hall of Fame if he keeps this up.
Oh, there's no doubt. That 2013 draft, Mark Appel to the Astros, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chris Bryant to the Cubs. John Gray to the Rockies. Okay, let me just read you these names. Cole Stewart, Clint Frazier, Colin Moran, Trey Ball, Hunter Dozier. Stop me when you recognize one name.
Yeah.
Austin Meadows, Phillip Bickford, Dominic Smith, DJ Peterson, Hunter Renfro. We're at 13.
Yeah.
Reese McGuire, Braden Shipley, J.P. Crawford, Tim Anderson to the White Sox, who we have heard of, but only because we live here.
Right.
Chris Anderson, Marco Gonzalez, Jonathan Crawford. My point is that none of these guys are doing anything. Bryant is the Cubs were the only one that got a pick right to this point in that draft.
Yeah.
I mean,
baseball's hard, man.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, Mike Trout falls to the 24, was it?
I mean, they have
both teams in this town could have had Mike Trout. Think about that. Hey, is my hour of hating my life that Nick Wright gave me permission to have? Remember, Nick Wright gave me permission to hate my life for an hour after the White Sox. He said, if the White Sox blow this, have permission to hate your life. Is that hour up? Can I go back to loving my life
now? Yes, love your life. What do you want to talk about that you love right now? How's your move going?
I love you, Mark.
Oh, that's so nice of you, Adam. I love you, too.
Move is scheduled for next Saturday. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to miss a show, but it's what needs to be done.
You're not going
to
be here next Saturday?
I am not going to be here next Saturday. You're going to have to live. Maybe I will call in and give you an update on how the movers are going, how things are going.
But you got movers.
I kind of just blew it there, but I was going to tell you that anyway. I did get movers.
Are we proud of Adam Hogue for getting movers? Because I'm personally proud of Adam Hogue for getting movers.
I have to admit that the listeners, the fine listeners of this program on 720 WGN, kind of talked me into it. I even went back and listened to the podcast.
Did you really?
Yeah.
And it further convinced you to get movers?
It was a pretty eye-opening experience to hear that many people say,
just yell at you. You jerk. How could you make your friends help you?
Yeah, it was really the guilt trip. They were all willing and able to help me. But, of course, they're all pretty happy right now. They don't have to help.
How does your wife feel about the decision?
The best thing was is she was totally against moving ourselves. And then in the process of us deciding to do that, she went all in. So when I came home from the show on Sunday, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I said, honey, I think we should hire movers. She was like, what? She didn't like it. She had gone all in on the U-Haul, moving ourselves. So I had to reconvince her to go the other direction. And we're all on board. I hope it goes well.
It's going to go great.
And if it doesn't, I'm going to blame our listeners.
And that seems fair. The other thing we need to know about your life is, have you given in and gotten cable? And I'm assuming you haven't.
I have not, but there's been a strong consideration.
Uh-huh.
And here's why. Nothing has changed on the cable front. I have now gone 2 weeks and not really missed it. So then you might ask, well, why are you considering?
How are you going to watch Thunder and Warriors
tonight?
Well,
see, that's the thing. So to watch something like that, you can subscribe to like a $20 a month Sling TV service, which you just stream over the internet. And it looks great. I tried the 7-day free trial. Fine product. Decided not to pay the month's worth because I'm still trying all these different options out.
Mm-hmm.
And you just start doing the math, right? And if you're going to pay, like, you're still going to pay $50 for internet. You're still going to, then you're going to add on another 20 for Sling TV. And then, you know, maybe you add on another 15 for
TiVo. So you're going
to TiVo.
You're going to cave.
My point is when you add all that up, I called Comcast yesterday and I was like, what's the best deal you can give me?
Mm-hmm.
And what they quoted me was $10 more than what I would probably be paying without cable.
Which Comcast, by the way, has figured out. And they know
right.
that at this point, you'll...
But you have to talk them into it. Like, I had to... It's not what they were just offering. By the way, tip to everyone out there.
Yeah, do it.
Whether you're talking to Comcast, DirecTV, whatever, you can negotiate with these people. And it was one mention of, hey, I'm debating giving up my DirecTV, which they don't know that I already did. However, I was still debating maybe getting it again. But I did say, DirecTV offers me this. They don't charge me for this. They charge me half of what you're charging me for an extra cable box. Let me put you on hold. Come back. Hey, we can offer you this, this, and this, and this. There's a tip for you guys. It always works. And basically, they have offered me something that only cost me $10 more than if I had no cable. And it solves my problem of not having Comcast Sportsnet to watch these games. It gives me a DVR to record things again. Isn't that a no-brainer?
Oh, I think so. But I was pretty certain that you were just adamant that you were going to hang in there. And now you've...
Well, I haven't done it yet. I haven't made the decision.
Hang on a second, real quick. Raymond, you got a solution for Adam Hogue?
Yeah, hi. I actually found this out in college. It's called PlayStation View.
Mm-hmm.
You can stream it on like PlayStation, Fire TV, or a Roku box. And they have a package in Chicago for like $50 a month. Gets you like 130 channels and all the sports networks and everything.
See, that's a great point. Thanks for bringing it up. I did some research on that.
Thank you, Raymond.
But you pay $50 for that, and you're still having to pay for your internet.
Mm-hmm.
What's fifth? And the internet in this case for me, I don't know if you can get cheaper, but we need pretty reliable internet for what we do. Especially because when you guys hear me on this station from like my basement and it sounds like I'm in studio, that requires good internet. So that's $50. Then you pay for that $50 for the PlayStation View. You're talking about $100 a month.
Okay, let's rewind back though. How much have you missed cable?
Not really at all. That's the honest to God truth.
Right.
I have not missed it as much as I thought I would.
All right. Okay.
But part of that is
you're making an economic decision.
Part of that was, as I told you, I figured out a way to watch games, the White Sox and Cubs locally. And if I had not, in 100% honesty, because we are the honest program, right? That's what we've dubbed ourselves today, although Nick Wright did dispute that, especially on your end.
On this side of the microphone, yes.
Yeah. If I had not found a solution to watch the Cubs and White Sox, I would be missing cable. No question.
But you got creative.
I got creative. I've kept up.
I'm proud of you.
And really, it's been unfortunate that I did find a way to keep watching the White Sox.
That has been the unfortunate part.
I'd be better off if I...
It's been a rough go as of late.
I hadn't found that.
If you missed it today, the White Sox blew a 7-run lead in the ninth. Royals win 8-7. White Sox now in a mathematical tie at the top of the division. We'll talk to Paul Sullivan from Kansas City, hopefully at 6 o'clock. Amy Guth is going to join us as well before 7. And, of course, Amy will have the Saturday night special at 7 right here on 720 WGN.
Back here on the beat, Adam Hoge, Mark Carmen here with you till 7 o'clock. We'll catch up with Paul Sullivan here after the 6 o'clock news. He's in Kansas City where the White Sox blew a 7-1 lead. And definitely the heat on Robin Ventura building right now as White Sox are 4-13 in their last 17 games. There's also a report today that the White Sox are involved in trade discussions for James Shields with the Padres. And there were conflicting reports online, I guess there still are, that Eric Johnson, one of the White Sox pitchers, you may have seen him recently pitching poorly for the White Sox before he was sent down to Charlotte. He's supposed to pitch tonight for the Charlotte Knights, and there was a report that he had been pulled from his start tonight and was rumored in that Padres deal. Now those reports saying he's back on and pitching tonight.
It is crazy when you think about it, being a major league player, which is hard for all of us, I think, to relate to, but your life can change in the matter of a moment. Yep, you're traded, and now you're in San Diego, which would be cool.
If you're Eric Johnson...
Oh, you want to go, I would think.
Well, as long as they're going to bring you up, not if they send you to whatever their AAA affiliate is.
He's pretty much blocked.
The New Mexico Armadillos. Yeah. I just made that up.
Could be a good spot to be for a little while.
New Mexico?
Sure.
I'd rather be in Charlotte.
Beautiful country.
Charlotte's okay.
Sure. I like the Carolinas.
I don't like their discriminatory laws, but...
That's a fair thing to bring up. Absolutely.
But Charlotte is
LGBT.
City is okay.
I've been to Durham. I've never spent a ton of time in Charlotte. If you're one note that I don't want to forget about, Jimmy Gavin, who we had in studio here,
yeah,
who's on his
he's our guy.
Hopefully, trying to get drafted. He's got a workout scheduled with the Golden State Warriors. So, Gavin.
So he's going to save the Warriors tonight?
I don't know if he's going to save them tonight. In fact, I actually know he's not going to save them tonight. But Golden State is looking at Jimmy Gavin, who was in studio here, who had Crohn's disease and didn't play basketball in high school, but then was able to get himself onto a Bradley roster and then transferred to a Division II college in Wisconsin, then made his way to Winthrop and now trying to find his way to the NBA. It was really awesome to have him in studio a couple weeks back and just cool to see that he's going to be working out with the Warriors as he hopefully will get drafted or maybe brought in as a free agent. So Jimmy Gavin, we'll continue to look at him. Hoge, you were a big Jimmy Gavin guy. You can relate to Jimmy Gavin.
I like Jimmy. I mean, I can't say I really saw any of his games, though, in college.
No, but you guys bond.
Like, I'm not going to come out here and give you his NFL scouting report.
Well, that would
like
be.
Like I would
that
do
would be, that would
in
be,
April.
That would be irresponsible of you. But
right, that's my point.
But my point is that you
I like him as a person.
All I'm saying
and I'm rooting for him.
Right,
I hope he gets to the league.
I'm just saying you two bonded when you were in studio when he was in
and
studio.
If he for some reason ends up in the league and they come here, you know, he's on the Warriors and he's starting next to Steph Curry, probably backing him up. I would hope that maybe he drops a couple tickets.
That wouldn't be terrible.
Oh, Carm. Come out. Sit courtside.
I think Gavin would hook us up.
I don't think Gavin's getting the courtside seats.
Let me just touch on, I'll take an upper level. Let me just touch on one thing, NBA-wise, that we haven't hit. The report out of the Sun-Times this week on Joakim Noah.
Yeah.
Saying he was done with the Chicago Bulls and that he's going to go elsewhere. I've done some research on that. And at the end of the day, my sources tell me that if the Chicago Bulls want to pay Joakim Noah more than anybody else on the planet, then Joakim Noah is going to be a Chicago Bull. But if the money is the same or less, then Joakim Noah is not going to be a Chicago Bull.
Even the same?
Even the same. That's right.
So what does that say about management right now?
Not good.
That Mr. Bull, Joakim Noah,
I think
is willing to leave Chicago if he's got the same offer in Orlando. I just threw out a team.
Right.
He's going to go to Orlando.
Yeah, I don't know if it would be necessarily...
He's going to go Horace Grant on us.
I don't know if necessarily it would be Orlando, but it would be... It certainly would be New York or perhaps Minnesota with Tibbs.
That'd be sweet. I think I'm going to become a T-Wolves fan.
T-Wolves are a fun team.
So I got family up there already.
I just think it's pathetic that the heart and soul of the Chicago Bulls seemingly doesn't want to be a Chicago Bull. We're up against the 6 o'clock news, so quick timeout. We'll have Sully for you right after that, 720 WGN.
No, I was not glad.
Yeah, that wasn't great. Oh, but, you know, it's not that long ago the White Sox did this. 2013, they blew a lead in the ninth of 6 runs to the Tigers.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Paul Sullivan doing the dirty work down in Kansas City with the Chicago White Sox. Perhaps Sully is ruining the season himself. Paul, thank you for taking yeah. time.
What the heck happened today?
Beats me.
All right. Thanks for joining us. Yeah. We were already into our show here, but we did have it on the monitor. And I did say when they were up 7-1 that I did not feel safe, which I don't – at least it happened against the Royals where I guess like the Royals never quit. But come on. You can't have that happen.
Well, it happened, and obviously you said it happened in 2013, and Robin was manager of that one, too. So that's two stunning collapses on your resume and not too good. I just don't understand why he just left Robertson out there. It was pretty obvious that he didn't have anything, and then he put in Canely, who's, you know, basically just came up. It's his fourth game. He was so nervous, he threw a wild pitch on an intentional walk, which is, to me, was great because I'm totally against that rule proposal that they want to just put up, you know, 4 fingers for an intentional walk instead of making the pitchers actually throw the pitches for an intentional walk. And I think that proves, once again, what a stupid rule that would be because you just never know in baseball.
Yeah.
And he was obviously so nervous. And then once it got to within a run, you knew it was destined to be over. And then you can give credit to the Royals. I mean, what a great comeback team they've been the last couple of years, and they showed it again today, even with these new guys who, you know, just came up. This Eidner kid who had the game-winning single, I mean, he just came up yesterday. So just unbelievable.
I mean, that was the thing, Sully. We're sitting there basically, you know, waiting for the play to end and then doing our own little mini recap as it was unfolding. I'm like, don't know who Canely is or Tommy whatever. This guy just came up. Somehow he's in there. And I don't know who just got the game winner, Eibner. I mean, and then the third baseman for the Royals who just maybe just ended Salvador Perez's season.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a bunch of no-names, really, which is fun.
Yeah, and the guy that got the game-tying hit, Drew Butera, was only in there because he had to replace Sal Perez. So
and then meanwhile, again, we weren't able to watch, you know, pay exact close attention to everything that was going on. But if I'm correct, he once again pitched to Hosmer with first base open, and then later you walked the bases loaded – when there's so many, I mean, I get it because the run on third is all that matters at that point. But there's so many things that can happen when the bases are loaded, and you walk Jared Dyson, who like can't hit, and you're willing to walk him, but not Eric Hosmer. I'm just, did Robin talk about that at all?
I think Hosmer would have been the tying run.
Right.
So okay.
Right.
Sure. So I.
But again, last night that was an issue too.
Yeah. It was like last night he refused to give the intentional walk. Today he gives 2 of them in the inning. So it's just like everything Robin did the last couple of days basically backfired on him. And I don't know, you know, I guess I know how he'll survive. This is because he does have the, you know, confidence of management, but boy, I mean, he was already on bad paper with White Sox fans. And after a brutal loss like this, coming off of last night, oh boy.
So am I hearing you right here, Sully, Paul Sullivan in the Chicago Tribune, that you would make a change if you were the White Sox in the managerial seat?
I didn't say that, but I would think that they would have to consider it at this point. I mean, it can't really make a change with a guy with the team in first place. Let's point that out right there. It would be probably maybe not unprecedented, but pretty strange.
They're not going to be in first place though after today.
Why did Cleveland win?
Yeah, well, they were up 8-1 last I checked. So I think,
and I guess the Royals are tied now anyway. Yeah. So, whether it really were too early in the season for that to matter, but I don't know. It was not a very good game for Robin, and last night was not a very good game for Robin, and I don't know. There's no way of getting around that. So, but you know how Kenny and Han are. They're pretty loyal guys, and they've stuck with him this long. But I'm sure there's going to be a lot of White Sox fans. In fact, I know there already are on Twitter I'm trying to write my story, and they keep pinging me to get rid of Robin. So if you are following me on Twitter, please stop tweeting me right now so I can finish my story.
Was Nate Jones not available, Sully? Because, I mean, he pitched last night, but
What did Robin say after the game in terms of the whole pitching in the ninth inning today? Because I had the same observation you did. I mean, it was obvious Robertson didn't have his stuff. You kept him in there too long. And then why bring in Canely? What was that about?
Well, Canely is a power pitcher. He's fresh. He was thrown, he throws 98. He thought he was the best guy for the job. And I asked him if Canely was nervous because I don't know if you could tell, but besides the wild pitch on the intentional walk, a lot of other pitches that he had on intentional walks were, almost thrown away.
Yep.
So
he was almost throwing he was almost throwing strikes, Sully. I was thinking we were going to get a Kelly Leak moment where he just reached out,
Exactly. He didn't know what he was doing, and he wasn't really available afterwards. So Robin just kind of talked around it. I don't know why Nate Jones was not available. As you said, he did pitch last night. Maybe he was. At that point, I wasn't looking in the bullpen to see if anyone was warming up. But when you put your closer in a game with a 6-run lead in the ninth, you're just giving him work. You're not thinking about, putting anyone else in. And it all just happened so fast, and then it was – it just spun out of control quickly, and then all hell broke loose. And I don't know.
You got any more White Sox questions there?
I do, because then I realize this might not have been front and center considering you're in Kansas City covering this big collapse today. But that report today about James Shields, White Sox reportedly interested in him. Have you done any digging on that? Does it make sense?
I guess it makes sense. I mean, they're looking for another starter, and the Padres definitely going to, try and deal him. But right now, I would think, they've got other problems on their mind right now. So if that does happen, I can't imagine it happening, right away. It would maybe take a few weeks if they did get involved, and there would probably be some other teams that want Shields too. Pretty significant, payments there because he's got, 3 years left? I'm not sure. Two or three?
3 years, $21 million each of those years. Yeah. It's a lot of money for a 34-year-old.
Yeah. It's hard for me to imagine that they would do that, but, who knows?
Paul Sullivan, Chicago Tribune, with us for a couple more moments, then we'll let him do his real work, which is, of course, writing today's piece. Sully, as far as those Northsiders are concerned, what do you see the Cubs doing as far as the trade deadline goes? Do you anticipate a super aggressive upgrade to the bullpen, willing to trade, one of their somewhat premier prospects? Or do you think, I know it's way early here, but what's the sense you're getting?
Honestly, I think it's way too early to be thinking about that because, it looks at this point like it's going to be Cubs in Pittsburgh. I don't really see the Cardinals. I'm sure they could get back in it, but they look dead. So they look like a 500 team. So I think it's going to depend on how close the race is at that point and how they think of themselves as whether they have enough to. Obviously, they're going for the World Series to win the World Series. So I know that they didn't even consider getting a closer in the off season. They have a lot of confidence in Rondon, and he's had a good year. They could use maybe another middle reliever too, but really, I don't know. Are you going to trade one of your top prospects for a middle reliever? I don't think so.
Right, right. You've covered baseball now how long, Sully? Not to date you.
The 80s, late 80s, 89, right. 88, 89. I covered the Cubs of 89. I was the backup guy. So.
Boys of Zim. I don't know why I really needed the reference, but the point being is that, okay, fine. You saw the Boys of Zim.
I'm old.
No, well, I'm saying you're actually like you're a Benjamin Button type. You're getting younger by the day here.
Thanks.
But you saw, like, 89, though, was a perfect thing to what I'm trying to get to. Like, Don Zimmer got a ton of credit for the Cubs winning that year. I mean, there was the Boys of Zimmer and all that stuff. And then you've had other scenarios where Dusty comes in here and they win in 03, and then you can even go back. There's point. Ozzie Guillen, a lot of people wouldn't think the White Sox would have won the World Series. I'm one of those people in 2005. I'm just curious, in your mind, where I'm going here is, do you think that the manager makes a difference? How much of a difference do you think he makes? Because with the Robin talk, it's like, how much of a difference would a new guy make?
Yeah. You know, I think it's different for every team. You look at Ned Yost, everyone thought what a terrible manager he was, and he took the team to back-to-back World Series and won it last year. And I don't think anyone really looks at him as a great manager, but, you know, you look at his track record, his recent track record, and it's pretty impressive. Joe Maddon, obviously, what he did in Tampa and what he's doing with the Cubs, you have to say he's one of the best managers in the game right now and maybe in the last couple decades. So he's definitely making a difference. Would a guy make a difference with the White Sox? I think it depends on who it was. Certainly, if they did pull the plug on Robin, I would imagine that the guy that they have in mind would be Rick Renteria. Ugh. And we, you know, I agree. What could you, can I quote you on that?
Please.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't understand that. It does nothing for anyone.
It's not going to really, you know, get everyone excited, but I mean, I think they brought him in there just in case. And I would think he would be next up.
So no, any chance they would go outside? I mean, I don't know if Ron Gardenhire has any interest or... What's the percentage chance that they would ever put Ozzy back in there?
Zero.
Zero?
Yeah. Yeah. They would have to get rid of Kenny and Han, and Reinsdorf would have to sell the team for that to happen.
Wow.
So
okay.
If that all happens, then yeah, there's a possibility. But no, that ship has sailed.
There are some White Sox fans that would be in favor of all that happening.
quite a few, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
You know, and Ozzy's Q rating is way higher than the other three. So, you know, I'm not saying it would be a bad idea for Ozzy to come back. I'm just saying I don't see the White Sox letting that happen.
Right.
Well, the results since they made that move have not necessarily been favorable.
Well, it's crazy. Just a couple weeks ago, you know, some people were writing give Robin an extension. So it just goes to show that, you know, you just... It's such a crazy game. You just can't make judgments this early in the season.
Sully, thanks for taking time, man. You're especially in the middle of the work. We apologize, actually, for bothering you, but it's always great to have you on the station, so thank you.
No, I enjoyed it, and I do agree with you. Oh.
That's great.
I'm going to quote you on that. Oh.
That's at least that's like Twitter quotable, at least. So
yes, it is. Yeah.
Thanks, Sully.
Right, guys.
Take care, Sully. There he goes. Paul Sullivan down in Kansas City. Amy Guth's going to be in studio with us. Adam Hogue looks like he wants to react to that conversation next, so we'll do that. Is that about right there?
It's just like, this is not a good situation.
This is
not. It's just not.
It's not. You're absolutely right. It most definitely
it sucks.
Is not. 720 WGN. Gonna have Amy Guth in studio with us after the 6:30 news.
I guess that's the bright side. My summer just opened up a little.
Oh, come on. It ain't over. Relax. You're long baseball season. Come out and win tomorrow. You'll be feeling so good, right? Fast forward 24 hours, 23 hours, because we'll be off the air at 6. So at 5:26 tomorrow, if the White Sox have won tomorrow, you'll have a smile on your face. You'll be feeling like, hey, anything's possible. It's just one bad day or two bad days.
Hey, the last two wins, I was at those games.
Mm-hmm. You felt great, didn't you?
That goes back to, by the way, 10 days.
It's been
two wins.
It's been an interesting one today. White Sox blowing a 7-1 lead. Adam Hogue has had Meltdown City. And just, you know,
not really. I think I've handled it okay.
We had a couple meltdowns. I mean, you walked out of the studio twice.
Yeah, but that was a bit.
Oh, it was?
Twice? When did I walk out the other time?
I think you left twice.
I went to the bathroom one time.
Oh, okay.
That went, and it was during a break.
Okay. Okay. Well, you're
I did walk out during the, well, the moment the White Sox blew it.
Did I? Yeah. I felt bad.
I left for 5 seconds. I came back. I didn't miss anything.
No, you didn't. And tonight, we got some good sports action for the NBA folk. Thunder and Warriors. Am I the only one that's going to be watching this around here? Am I the only one that's excited? I'm going to try to find a nice outdoor bar scenery.
Ooh, that sounds kind of attractive.
Slash watch Thunder Warriors game 6. That's my plan.
I could be interested in that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, look at that. Adam and I might spend some time off the air together.
I mean, not the Thunder Warriors part, just the outdoor bar-y
okay.
beverage.
There you go.
Nice summer evening in Chicago.
I mean, it's a beautiful night. Come on. You got to enjoy it. We'll get you set for the news and Amy Guth. But before we get out of here, just remind me after Amy, I want to give my one more Bulls thought on Joakim Noah this week. Because maybe I'll just save it for tomorrow.
We could do it tomorrow.
I'm really...
Or better yet, save it for Saturday when I'm not here. I'm just kidding.
That's not nice.
I'm just kidding.
News is next. Then Amy Guth, 720 WGN.
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago Sports Spoken here. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Got another 24 minutes with you here on 720 WGN, and then Amy Guth takes over the Saturday night special, but we asked her to come in here a little bit early to talk about sort of a sports topic. Adam Hoge, Mark Carmen here with you.
You sure you want to do this, Amy? Because apparently last time you were on with us, people got very angry.
You have really protective listeners, which I find endearing, but I don't like it when it is directed at me. So, yeah, last time I came in for crosstalk a couple of weeks ago, I hope it didn't come across as rude. I respect
no,
you
wasn't
both. But
it certainly wasn't rude to us.
Right.
You're talking about a guest we had on.
Yeah, it was about a guest. And I said, hey, what, you know, here's a thing you could have brought up. And it was no big deal. I thought your beloved listeners really found that to be distasteful and let me know about that in graphic detail via social media, the text line, and callers.
Good. Yeah, if you're one of the people that harassed Amy after we left that night and...
Well, Amy can handle herself.
Yeah, no, but just in general, be a better person in life. That's just some of the stuff is just ridiculous.
I mean, I've talked about that kind of thing with other female hosts on this station. Of you know, a lot of us just there are times where we don't look at the text message screen as much as we should or want to because sometimes it's just kind of gross and it's hard to do a show if someone's saying dirty stuff about you or insulting stuff. It's just like let us just do our jobs.
Well, we certainly have people that disagree with us and take it to an obscene level, but it certainly seems like you have filthier things directed your way it's stupid.
Like right now there's a guy in this 574 texting and suck, you can probably handle that. I mean it's
right, well it's also accurate right
now. You know, I think what's interesting about sports journalism in particular is that it is kind of a bit of a it's a great example of kind of what happens with online harassment and in just a more concentrated way. So for male sports journalists, usually it's about the point he's making. Like if you say, I think the Broncos are going to whatever win the Super Bowl, right? It's usually about, no, you're a freaking idiot. No way that's going to happen. But it's handleable. It's not necessarily polite, but it's more about the point you're making. Whereas with female sports reporters, and you can go on Twitter and see this. This is very well documented, that a lot of times it's not about the point she's making. The point that she's making becomes a jumping off point to talk about her body or say something really sexual. And so the Pew Research Center they collected a lot of data around this. So you can really see about how, you know, they studied this over a long period of time, about how common go for different targets. And in fact, men get a little more grief online than women do, just in volume. But for women, it tends to be like sexual or violent really quickly. So you and I could both go on the air and say, you know, we predict this team will do the following. We could say almost identical things, but more likely someone would just disagree with your point, whereas they would make it about my, you know, body or weirdly, this is the thing that happens all the time. It's usually like, shut up, you dumb slut. What? wait, what? What does that have to do with this team prediction I'm making, right? Like, that's usually kind of the way it goes. It'll be like something like that that's just kind of a, what a weird thing to do. And we see this playing out even in really high profile female sports journalists of how like weirdly sexual stuff will get. Like, just criticize her point, just like everybody else. You know, you don't have to make it about her body or whatever.
Well, on Twitter or any social media, really, you get the old behind the computer screen muscle.
Big tough guy. Yeah. Right.
And
right.
Then, okay, let's get in a room and let's see how that plays out. And it, of course, would look a whole lot different. They're not going to do that to your face. You wouldn't think.
I would imagine not. I mean, we saw that there was a video making the rounds just a couple of weeks ago about a bunch of male actors that were called upon to read tweets.
Yeah, yeah.
Actual tweets to female sports journalists. And you know, there were some really emotional reactions from the men. And one of them even said, I can't say this to you. And they weren't the senders of those tweets. They were hired.
Right, they were just random people.
They were just random guys. But they, when they really saw these things, it was hard to just look at a person and say, gosh, I'm really sorry that got sent to you. So,
well, I would hope that most men would react that way.
I think so, definitely. Definitely.
Well, and we brought you, the original intent of this conversation was to talk about Jessica Mendoza, who does great work for ESPN and is on Sunday Night Baseball. And, of course, getting lots of reactions because it's very... It's unique to have a woman in the booth, not you know on the sideline, but somebody
who's kind of a pioneer.
Yeah,
she is.
Yeah.
She's an actual color analyst on big time, prime time network Sunday Night Baseball games for ESPN, and I think she does a great job. But there's been plenty of I'm sure she's facing tons of private backlash, like you're talking about now. When it's not about her work, it's about.
It's really sexual. Some of it's violent. I mean, I looked it up just a couple of hours ago just to see what was happening. And I was looking at Twitter just to see the kind of stuff that she is receiving. And you know, there was plenty of it that was quite supportive. And it was like, you know what? Hell yeah. You are blazing trails. And thank you for doing this because I aspire to do what you do. And, you know, there were some like teenage girls I saw tweeting at her that was really great. And, you know, it's... With that, though, there were also some things implying that she and Aaron Boone probably have sex in the booth during games and that, you know, that clearly, you know, the word clearly kept being thrown out, like clearly she slept her way there and that, you know, but the big kind of kerfuffle sort of happened recently with Mike North because he said, you know, I don't like what she's doing. In fact, he said she's the worst.
I have the tweet right here or what he said it on a radio show. Yeah. It was tweeted out by Fox Sports Radio, but the quote was, ESPN's Jessica Mendoza is the worst. If she was a man, she'd already be fired.
And I just don't think that's true. I think she's doing a great job. I mean, and everyone's entitled to their opinion, but I think she's rocking it. I think she is a student of that game. She studies the game so much and the strategy and the players, and she knows a lot about what she's talking about. And when I feel like when I listen to her, I learn a lot. You know, well, I think she has a really compelling things to say about the game.
Well, she played softball, and she's a four-time first-team All-American at Stanford. So
gold medalist.
Yeah.
So, look, I mean, I played hardball when I was in Little League, but most of my baseball, and a little bit in high school too, but most of my baseball is playing softball, by the way, and it's not playing it at that level. So, and most people, most guys, hardcore baseball dudes, it ain't like they're on the field right now playing baseball. If they're playing anything, they're most likely playing softball. None of that actually matters, but I think it's just something worth pointing out.
And I think it's really interesting how there's so many women that are sideline reporters in sports, but for some reason, being in that booth is something, you know, it's so threatening and so weirdly threatening to have a woman in that booth, which I think is so odd. It's 2016. What, who cares? Right. So I think it's really interesting. I mean, I can't repeat most of the tweets on the air that she's been receiving lately, but most of them are just in the vein of this is disgusting. This is disgrace. I go to sports to get away from women, which is kind of an interesting narrative that pops up a lot when you see that. But, you know, she seems to be taking it in stride as best she can. I think it's cool that she's being really honest about it, being hurtful. She said, to be perfectly honest, it's hard. Okay, you don't have to like everything I say, but when the comments are so strong, you go, would they say that about a guy? Would they say that about a man? And you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. You don't have to like every single sports reporter. I certainly don't. None of us do, right? It's impossible. You can't possibly like the contributions of every single person on the air.
I tend to dislike all of them because I'm jealous of every single one of them.
I could do that better. I could do that better, right.
Why hire him? How come they didn't hire at the car? What the hell?
See, there's that.
Man or woman. Believe me, I don't discriminate.
Why do you think women are kind of pigeonholed into what, like, just the sideline reporter, for instance? It's like, why is that the only job they can do?
I don't know. I wish I did know. I mean, I think there are just some roles that are so widely accepted as being male that the idea of changing that. I mean, people freak out about change. People freak out about change in any way. I mean, when Facebook changes its logo, you'd think that, you know, our houses got set on fire. People freak yeah. out about change. They don't like change. We're not wired for change. And very few people embrace it. So I think that you know, people kind of come unglued, especially when it's something really, really ingrained and socialized in us, like a gender role or something like that. People really kind of freak out about that. And I mean, good for her for being able to say, you know what, I want this job. I know that this is not something women have done, but this is what I want. This is my dream. And she hasn't let, you know, any of these things stop her. But it's got to wear on her. I mean, there's no way it can't. I know firsthand, right? It wears you out when you're kind of getting beat up online.
Listen, I like the value of having somebody in the booth that's actually played the game. But yeah. but a lot of times it's a three-man booth or a three-person booth. Maybe.
See, I think that gets held on to too much. I think there's a lot of people yeah. out there who haven't played the game who can do a fine job.
Absolutely. Of course. I agree with that. And frankly, you know what? I think it's a problem when you have a booth full of people that have played the game. The conversation is a little bit inside baseball. And so I was talking to a friend of mine who did not grow up in the United States but really enjoys baseball and knows a ton about baseball. And for her, it was really difficult to follow. Like, she found the everything coming out of the booth to be really distracting, and she felt kind of excluded by it, because she was like, how do you learn anything about baseball in this country when you're growing up? If it's, you know, the minute you turn on a broadcast, it's already a language you don't know, because it's this kind of like insider lingo, which I think is a really good point. It isn't super accessible unless you're really following sports really closely.
Plus, and listen, if you're baseball and you're trying to grow your brand and you have one person in the booth who's doing the play-by-play and you have one person who played it and can speak it, and then you have one person like Jessica Mendoza who played it in her own right and also can identify with a fan base perhaps that you don't have a complete lock on, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a win. I mean, it makes sense why you would hire somebody like Jessica Mendoza who can connect with people that you're not necessarily normally connecting with. I mean, that's a strategy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, everybody's entitled to their opinion, you know, back to kind of the Mike North specific thing. And he said, you know, look, I'm hired to give my opinion. Well, you're hired to give your opinion about the game, not necessarily about other journalists, you know. So I don't think that's a totally fair thing to say.
Well, it's okay to say you don't like, if you don't personally like her as an analyst, and
yeah,
that's it, fine. But you don't have to go to the point where, oh, if she was a man, she'd already be fired.
Or the worst ever. I mean,
the worst ever was the thing with Mike Bell a while back was said about
because
her.
There's broadcasters I don't like. Sure.
Right.
And there's games I listen to and I'm like, oh, this isn't working.
But, right. Absolutely. But to go play that, to make it that, if she was a man, she'd be fired. Like, that's just not fair. You know, it's hard enough. You know, it's hard enough to do for any of us, right? To be on the air, it's not the easiest job in the world. It's a cool one, but it's not the easiest job in the world. And I feel like if you have the opportunity to do that job, especially in her case, that she fought for that job and had to kind of blaze trails to get there and then has to kind of deal with this sort of nonsense, I just don't think that's fair. Especially, you know, poor woman, after that Mike Bell scandal, I guess it was probably 6 or 8 months ago when he said that kind of Anchorman-related slur towards her, so...
I'm just really fortunate that I'm just so naturally talented at this that it comes so easy for me. It's hard for me to relate to the struggles that you're talking about.
Okay. So very talented.
Right. Yeah. Stop kidding. Okay, Amy's going to stick around with us for the next segment, and we'll set up her show as well, and we'll do a little bit more. Adam, you look like you want to say something to me, too.
Yeah, I just want to disagree with everything you had just said. Well, no. I think it's assumed.
It was, and it is, and everyone agrees. 720 WGN.
Got Amy Guth here with us. We have a productive conversation, I think, about women in sports, and specifically what has happened with Jessica Mendoza, who I think does a great job in the ESPN baseball booth, and I enjoy listening to her baseball conversation. Can we take a phone call?
Sure. Let's get Mike in here. He wants to talk about Mike North. Mike for Mike North on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, guys. First of all, let me preface this by saying Amy Guth, I think, rocks. She's amazing, and I learn something from her every time I listen to her on the show, whether it's the noon thing that she does or her shows in general. I've been listening to her since she's been doing stuff at 11 o'clock.
Thanks,
so
Mike.
I'm a huge fan.
Thank you. Really huge fan.
And, you know, here's the thing. Even with Mike North, going back to that, I used to be a huge sports fan and the whole nine, but I think for him to be making comments like that, I mean, he got into radio almost on accident. A lot of what he said was for shock value. There was times where he would make statements on the air where and I'm sure he's still doing it now somewhere, but he used to make himself sound so ridiculous because he was so uneducated at so many levels. And for him to be making, you know, comments like this, this continues to show ignorance so much on his part. And I think just in radio in general has just gotten like that so much where it's people that are getting into radio never really had to, you know, some people, you have to go through a process of an education to get to be a journalist or a broadcaster. Nowadays, radio has become where, hey, if you have a personality of some sort or some kind of shtick, let's throw you on the air. If you're a comedian, hey, let's throw you on the air or former whatever. And, you know, they think the audience is so stupid that we would listen to just anybody or anything. And I think it really has to get past that and go back to, like, again, what I said, when I listen to somebody like Amy Good, I learn. And it's nice to listen to somebody who's creative and who has something to talk about with substance rather than just throw out a stupid opinion.
Appreciate the phone call, Mike.
You made it. You made Amy smile, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
A couple of thoughts on that. People do like to be entertained. That's part of people when they're listening. They're not necessarily looking for, you know, a Channel 11 conversation to his point. But it's also like you also want somebody who sits behind the microphone that can do both, right?
Well, you want to try. I want to trust the person I'm listening to that what they're saying is genuine and they're not just saying something to get a reaction.
To be volatile. Right. I think we're in such a reality TV moment, you know, that we're used to that. And I think we've gotten into a culture where only the loudest, the meanest, the most shocking, becomes the most compelling. And we look at the shiny object that's going, you know, flipping out in this particular moment or on this particular channel.
Look at the presidential election.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Case in point. I mean, it is behaving like a reality show, too. So I think we're kind of in that moment, which pains me a lot because I think there's a lot of thoughtful commentary that gets missed. Just because it's not being said by a volatile person that's into, you know, shocking people necessarily, just people that just want to have good conversations.
And I don't really know the solution to that. I mean, you're people are going to get attention. Networks are going to give people attention that get eyeballs. And
I think there needs to be a cultural shift in order to, you know, people are responding.
Yeah.
You know, so the listener culture has to shift in order to.
And how did we get to that point? That's a one little bitty bit at a time, right?
I mean, I think it's going to, two things. I think it's one little bit at a time. It'll be incremental change, but also sometimes it takes one or two people to go really far in one direction to move the middle an inch. I mean, we saw that like very different subject, but social change nonetheless. We saw that in the civil rights movement, right? Some really, really, leaders that were really willing to stand out were able to move the vast majority just a little bit along that continuum.
Well, and there was a piece in the Tribune this week talking about Chicago as far as the racist city that we live in, as far as the huge discrepancy between whites having jobs versus blacks having jobs. This is not the conversation we're really having here. But you read that, and I did a little bit on that earlier in the week when I was doing the non-sports show. It's like, how far have we really come, realistically, since 19, whatever you want to put it? In this particular city, how far have we really come from the days of Jane Byrne going to Cabrini Green and staying here and saying it's okay? I mean, how far have we really, if you look at the education in the city...
I've talked about this in the air before because I think it's really interesting that I went and looked up some of the narratives around and some of the quotes taken from people right after the Haymarket riots. And you know what? They're not very different than what is being said right now. They're still the same conversation. So to me, that points to need for a systemic change and not that everything is bad, but just there's some parts that just don't work anymore, and we need to update them and change them. And part of it is the geography of the city, right? It's laid out to be a fairly segregated city,
right?
Which is unfortunate, and that's a physical barrier to a fully functioning city, in my opinion.
That's Amy Guth, and her show is coming up in just a matter of moments. What are you going to be focused on tonight?
You know what? Tonight we're going to be talking about vacation and how it used to be this thing that got us saying yes and thing we really looked forward to. But only, 41% of Americans, or sorry, 41% of Americans saying, you know, I didn't take any days off last year at all. I didn't take
any.
And only about 13% of people, according to this one survey, took their full vacation, as much as they were entitled to take for their jobs. So we're going to be talking about that. Dr. John Duffy will be here talking about the health benefits and planning the show with him and reading some of his work on this topic. It's really interesting and kind of scary that we do not take as much vacation as other countries do. But then Dave Schwann is going to join and talk about some of his recent and favorite trips. And then we're going to talk about some travel apps. So it's going to be all vacation-y.
One of the greatest voices in radio, Dave Schwann. I just feel so comfortable with the Dave Schwann.
So my secret goal of the night is I kind of want him to record my outgoing voicemail message because I think that'd be super cool.
That would be cool.
Amy Goop.
I think that would be spectacular.
I'm not going to try to imitate Dave Schwann.
Somewhere Dave Schwann is raging at that.
That was terrible.
That was terrible. Awful.
Amy, thanks for joining us. Have a great show.
Thanks.
That's Amy Goop. Adam.
Thanks to Paul Sullivan.
Mm-hmm. Nick Wright. And Phil Kuntz, who caught 2 foul balls at Wrigley Field.
Oh, yeah, the foul ball guy. Yep. That seems like it was 3 days ago.
It really does. Sorry to the White Sox. Tomorrow will be better. Cubbies are unbelievable.
We're going
to
podcast our interview with Nick Wright, by the way. So if you want to hear me melting down live on the air as the White Sox blow a 7-1 lead and Nick Wright giving me permission to hate the next hour of my life. I'm glad I got that permission. I also don't think I followed through on it.
alongside LeBron James, MVP, greatest basketball player ever talk. That will all be in that podcast. All right, Amy's next, 720 WGN.